Sir Keir Starmer.
Well, we need to establish a full picture. I then need to speak to President Trump. I need to speak to our allies. Mm-hmm. But I don't shy away from this.
What does he need to know?
Plus, the latest on that tragedy in the Swiss ski bar as identifications go on. The Prime Minister saying he wants to have closer ties with the EU single market. It's preferable to a customs union, but what exactly is the difference? Plus... tragedy for singer Jessie Nilsson, revealing her twin girls have a severe genetic condition. More on that. Those stories after the 7 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, Venezuela's ousted leaders expected to appear in court in New York later to face drugs and weapons charges. Nicolas Maduro was seized by American special forces in Caracas on Saturday. Venezuela's acting president, Delcy Rodriguez, has said that she's seeking a balanced relationship with Washington. Speaking overnight on board Air Force One, President Trump told reporters that Ms. Rodriguez needs to cooperate.
We're dealing with the people that just got sworn in, and don't ask me who's in charge, because I'll give you an answer and it'll be very controversial.
What does that mean?
That means we're in charge.
Have you spoken with her?
We're in charge.
Have you spoken with her?
No, I haven't, but other people
have. Do you want to?
Yeah, at the right time, I will.
Sir Keir Starmer is under pressure from some of his own MPs to oppose the US action in Venezuela on Saturday. The Chief Secretary to the Prime Minister, Darren Jones, spoke to LBC yesterday. He refused to say whether he thought American strikes on Caracas broke laws.
The UN Security Council is going to meet this week, and the American administration will have to set out the legal basis. I'm saying that we need to see the legal basis for the operation that the Americans undertook. They've not published that detail yet. I'm assuming they will do.
A former pupil at a British school has been confirmed as one of the 40 people killed in a fire at a Swiss ski resort on New Year's Day. Charlotte Nidham, who was 15, had been working as a babysitter in the Crans Montana area. Officials have now identified all the victims. From today, mobile phones and SIM cards can be seized from illegal migrants without needing to arrest them. Ministers are hoping new powers for Border Force officials will speed up investigations and tackle people smuggling gangs. A ban on advertising unhealthy foods on television and online is coming to force this morning as part of plans to tackle childhood obesity. Ads for items high in fat, salt and sugar will only be allowed to be shown on TV after 9 p.m. And amber weather warnings for snow remain in force for northern Scotland. Less severe yellow alerts are also in place for much of the rest of the UK. In this city, the FTSE 100 will reopen later at 99.51. It closed up 19 on Friday. The pound buys $1.35 and a euro 15. LBC weather staying very cold but bright for most of the UK today. Some snow showers continuing for northern Scotland and northern England with a high of 2 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Aldi can't save you from that 6 a.m. boot camp.
Drop and give me 50!
But they can save you a healthy amount on this Greek yogurt. Kaye Total Greek Yogurt is £3.75 at Tesco, but Aldi's is just £1.99. Aldi, always finding ways to save.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. 3 minutes after seven on Monday, January the 5th, the aftermath of that extraordinary American intervention in Venezuela. Exactly what happens now? Will it go to UN Security Council meeting? And what, in which case to a vote? In which case, which way would the United Kingdom vote? And it is reported that Sir Keir Starmer has a bit of a rebellion on his hands because of many Labour supporters who support Maduro. I'll be telling you, by the way, shed no tears for the deposed Venezuelan leader. I'll explain why in just a moment. But as ever, what does it mean? Will it move the markets?
Global markets take a wait-and-see approach to events in Venezuela, with stocks steady but gold inching higher. I'm Christian May from City AM, discussing this and the rest of the business news with Nick shortly.
Some of you might have seen the Prime Minister giving an interview to the BBC yesterday to start the year, in which he touched on our relationship with our close friends in Europe.
If it's in our national interest to have even closer alignment with the single market, then we should consider that. We should go that far.
What's the difference between a single market and a customs union? Some commentators are shrieking that this is dragging us back towards closer ties with the European Union and undoing Brexit. What is the reality? Stay tuned, I'll give you full details. The tragedy of that bar in Switzerland, the identification of the bodies goes on. We understand the death toll still stays at 40, but serious injuries. We'll have a report from there. Plus, back to the UK. And you may recall, prior to the election, one of the policies from the Labour Party was the idea of putting VAT on school fees, private school fees. Well, I challenged the Education Secretary, Bridget Phillipson, multiple times last year about how many children could leave education following that move. We go back to the November prior to the election. Are you aware how many private school students have applied to join state schools between June and September?
I reject the kind of the premise that was always there, but we haven't seen movement.
Well, what the government, well, in opposition, what they said, well, would be around 100 during the full course of Parliament. It's now more than 100 in 1 year and more than 2,500 children. That is the reality. More later in the show.
Nick Harari at breakfast. Call 0345 60 60 973. Text 84850. Nick Harari at breakfast on LBC.
As I said before, shed no tears over Nicolas Maduro. Study closely how the United States have achieved what the US have achieved. But just bear in mind, Maduro is the leader of a country where, over the last 10 years, living standards have dropped by 74%. During the so-called elections in 2024, when 80% of the votes were in, and the opposition candidate, Edmundo Gonzalez, was double the votes of Maduro, they cancelled the election, stole the ballot sheets, and imprisoned loads of people, some of whom were never seen again. Also, by the way, inflation in Venezuela is set to come in at 250% last year. So shed no tears for the fact that he's been arrested in the most spectacular fashions. The key now is what happens next. Because if you look at America's history, in some instances, it's not particularly spectacular, is it? Vietnam, if you're old enough. Iraq. Afghanistan. In others, it's spectacular. Probably you're not old enough, but post-war Japan. Post-war Germany. More recently, Panama, now one of the most successful countries in the whole of Latin America. So the key is what happened next. But so that we get the chronology right, let's bring you briefly up to date. Following President Trump's orders, the US launched those airstrikes on Caracas. Sounds like an old Morris 1100 I have, but there we are. It seemed to bring down the Venezuelan armed forces. And they captured the leader, Nicolas Maduro, along with his wife, Celia Flores. Speaking at a press conference later in the day, Trump said,
"We are going to run the country until such time as we can do a safe, proper, and judicious transition. We want peace, liberty, and justice for the great people of Venezuela."
Well, at least you know what you get. Here's, speaking on the BBC yesterday, Prime Minister Sir Keir Starmer. Someone raise their hand if you can understand whether he's for or against.
Well, we need to establish a full picture. I then need to speak to President Trump. I need to speak to our allies. But I don't shy away from this. I've been a lifelong advocate of international law and the importance of compliance with international law. But I want to ensure that I've got all the facts at my disposal. And we haven't got that at the moment.
Dear God, imagine him back in World War II. They'd still be planning the Normandy landings, I would imagine. Well, let's catch up with exactly what happens now. Simon Marks is LBC's Washington correspondent. Talk us through what the timeline might hold over the next 24 hours, Simon. Morning to you.
Morning to you, Nick, and Happy New Year. A very busy day lies ahead. A first court appearance in New York for Nicolas Maduro and his wife. They will have the narco-terrorism charges presented against them formally. They are expected to enter pleas of not guilty, but this is going to be a procedural hearing and the start of a very long legal road that lies ahead for both of them. Nearby at the United Nations, the Security Council will start discussing the U.S. president's action and whether or not it was legal.
There's not a war. I mean, we are at war against drug trafficking organizations. It's not a war against Venezuela.
That's Secretary of State Marco Rubio trying to dampen down all the fuss. He told ABC that when President Trump said on Saturday that the U.S. is now running Venezuela, what the president really meant is,
we have a quarantine on their oil. That means their economy will not be able to move forward until the conditions that are in the national interest of the United States and the interest of the Venezuelan people are met. And that's that's what we intend to do.
In other words, no occupation, no boots on the ground. But then last night, on Air Force One, his boss once again appeared to pull the rug from under him.
Don't ask me who's in charge, because I'll give you an answer and it'll be very controversial.
What does that mean?
We're in charge.
And he made fresh threats to expand America's aggression to at least one of Venezuela's neighbors.
Venezuela's very sick. Colombia's very sick, too. Run by a sick man who likes making cocaine and selling it to the United States. And he's not going to be doing it very long, let me tell you.
And if that wasn't enough, Nick, he is also again voicing threats towards Greenland. Last night, the Danish Prime Minister warned President Trump to knock it off, which, of course, is not a message this U.S. president currently appears to be programmed to receive.
Lastly, Simon, can you give us a sense, and I realize that it's a very disparate body or beast, how is U.S. media responding to this?
Well, I mean, they are, of course, all over this, because they would be, given the scale and the audacity of the operation that brought President Trump to bring Nicolas Maduro and his wife to New York. But, you know, there are all sorts of questions that are perhaps not getting the same focus in the United States as they are overseas. Why does President Trump keep prioritizing the interests of American oil companies when he talks about Venezuela? Why is he not calling for fresh elections? Why is he not calling for the return of Venezuela's opposition leaders to the country? And is it really possible that one of the reasons why he's not backing Maria Corina Machado as a future possible leader of Venezuela is because she is the woman who pipped him at the post for the Nobel Peace Prize?
LBC's Washington correspondent Simon Marks reporting 11 after 7. Let's go to Ivan Briscoe, who's Senior Director for Policy at Crisis Group, joining me now. Well, let's start, I guess, chronologically, your reaction to the action in Venezuela, and then perhaps more importantly, what needs to happen next. Mr. Briscoe, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks very much for inviting me on your show. The fact that it happened was not, strictly speaking, a surprise. We've had a tremendously long build-up to this. The naval flotilla on the Caribbean, out on the coast of Venezuela, was first deployed at the start of September. There have been many threats in the wake of that deployment. But I think what was extraordinary, and none of us who are Venezuela watchers or Latin American observers, expected that the US could carry out such a daring operation to snatch Maduro from what seems to have been the heart of the main military barracks in Caracas. We thought that he had rings of defense, that there would be that he would be operating in relatively great secrecy. But it seems that the United States had gathered the intelligence that they needed and that they had moved very effectively to neutralize all of Venezuela's defenses. So this is the situation we're left in. They've grabbed Maduro, but they've left the entirety of the Chavista regime in power. Which is an extraordinary arrangement. That's another surprise. But we at least presumed that if the US was going to move against Venezuela, they would try to decapitate not just the president, but most of the ruling clique, and that they would look to Maria Corina Machado or her surrogate, who won the elections in 2024, Edmundo González, to take power. I mean, this was very much what Maria Corina Machado has been saying for months. And Marco Rubio is very close to Maria Corina Machado in many different ways. But this new policy of, I don't know how you would describe it, remote governance via naval coercion outside Venezuela is something which we are all digesting at the moment, and we still don't really understand.
For the benefit of Venezuelans, what needs to happen next, in your view?
Well, I think for Venezuelans, I mean, Venezuelans have not been taken into account at any stage in this process. The Venezuelan public interest has not been listened to. Venezuelans obviously voted massively in 2024 for the opposition candidate. I think probably now it's going to be difficult to respect the results of that poll. But I think there's got to be a path towards fresh elections. And it's got to be a little bit clearer than the one laid out by Trump on Saturday, which will sort of push down the road at some moment once the US oil majors have started pumping oil again from the country to a sufficient extent. I think we need a clearer calendar in that respect. And I think we're going to need some gestures from the government of Delcy Rodriguez, the interim president, to show that, you know, the errors, the repression that Maduro has exerted in the country over the last few years is going to be lifted to a certain extent. Why not start releasing those 850 political prisoners in jail, including people I personally know and have absolutely, there is no just cause for them being in prison whatsoever. I mean, first of all, release them. Then obviously start reforming some of the key institutions of state, whether it's the electoral council, whether it's the judicial system, whether it's certain parts of the secret police and the security forces. All of these things could be done. But there are a number of problems in the back. I mean, it's not Trump's first interest, obviously.
I will leave it there. I hope, for your sake, that some of your friends and colleagues that do feature well out of this, and it ends happily for them. Ivan Briscoe, thank you. You're Senior Director for Policy at Crisis Group. So much to discuss. At least we know with that particular world leader where he is. We certainly don't with Sir Keir Starmer. What if there is a move, as there could be in Parliament today, as to whether the Trump's intervention was lawful? Which way should the United Kingdom vote on that? If it went to the UN Security Council, which way should the UK vote there? And as I said at the top, undoubtedly the world is a better place that he's been deposed. But what happens now? Have we got, if you look at America's track record, Vietnam, Afghanistan, Iraq, God no, Panama, or if you go back in time, Japan, yes, that's very beneficial. If we're talking about global matters, these people were among hundreds who attended a special Sunday Mass for the victims of that bar at that Swiss ski resort on the weekend.
When I have 15, I just go there too, so it could be us.
It's a quiet little ski village. I mean, usually there's lots of life. Now, since 3-4 days, we're all very sad.
Tragedy of the young there, isn't it? It's just on 7:16 LBC News headlines. Then Dominic Ellis.
President Trump has warned Venezuela's interim leader with a fate worse than Nicolas Maduro's if she doesn't do what's right. A former pupil at a British school has been confirmed as one of the 40 people killed in a fire at a Swiss ski resort on New Year's Day. And UK Border Force officers will be able to seize the mobile phones of illegal migrants from today without having to make arrests. LBC weather staying very cold but bright for most of the UK. Snow showers for northern Scotland and northern England. Highs of 2 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays on the M25 clockwise onto the QE2 bridge, and that's because a car has broken down. Just north of Marble Arch, the A5 Edgware Road remains closed both ways because of an ongoing police investigation. In Roehampton, Danebury Avenue is closed in both directions at Roehampton Lane. That's because of ice. And in Battersea, Lavender Hill is closed westbound at Cedars Road, and that's because of a burst water main. Only one Woolwich Ferry can currently run because of an ongoing technical problem. And on the Underground, there are severe delays on the Victoria line and minor delays as well on the Bakerloo line. And there are severe delays as well on the Mildmay line between Richmond and Willesden Junction.
This is LBC.
Chase is the digital bank you can count on.
How so?
Because you get 1% cash back on your grocery shop.
Like on prosciutto?
Yeah, prosciutto.
And seaweed crackers?
Sure, those two.
Well, hang on, what about rotisserie chickens?
If it's in your grocery shop, Chase has got your cash back. Join today and get 1% cash back on debit card spending on groceries, fuel and everyday transport. Chase, see what your money can do. 18 plus UK residents eligibility applies. 1% cash back for your first year. Maximum £15 per month. Exceptions apply.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
Experience. It's knowing when something is worth waiting for and when it isn't. That's why Saga Health Insurance offers unlimited GP appointments whenever you need them. With a choice of flexible plans, prompt tests and treatment, your health is taken care of. And right now, get 3 months free. Search Saga Health Insurance for a quote today. New customers starting a policy before the 19th of February, pay by monthly direct debit for the first year. Terms and conditions apply. Over 50s only.
Hiya, Kenny the Hamster here, beloved pet of Doug and Carol Brookbank. Now, I've got to hand it to Doug and Kazza. They're doing school pickups, jobs, trips to the supermarket, and still find time to get healthy. Apparently, it's down to some NHS Healthy Choices quiz. Only took them 5 minutes to do, then gave them a simple plan to get started.
Come on, kids.
Total amazeballs.
Take your first little step to healthy. Search NHS Healthy Choices quiz to get a score and a plan that's right for you.
Wellness. What even is wellness?
cleanses, routines, regimes, biohacks, stacks, schedules, procedures, programs. I suppose so. But can it just be a cup of... Pucker Herbal Tea. Ah, pucker. Nothing beats nature.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
19 minutes after 7. Unsurprisingly, a lot of you wonder how you say. You've had a couple of days, haven't you, to digest the news. Rob, you're going to be the first caller. The Venezuela story playing out on the front pages of many of your newspapers this morning. For the Daily Telegraph, Trump's set sights on Greenland. This is a suggestion, as LBC's Simon Marks was explaining, that there is a real fear there. Daily Mail brings it more to domestic matters. PM faces revolt by Labour's Maduro apologists. You have to, as I'm sure you're aware, know that there is quite a sizable rump within the Labour Party who have admired the work of not just Maduro, but before him, Venezuela President Chavez. Indeed, former London Mayor Ken Livingstone invited, as I recall, Chavez to City Hall here, and I think did a special deal to buy Venezuelan oil. So it's very much beloved of the hard left within the party, and that obviously is an issue for the Prime Minister. The other big story is the possibility of closer ties with the European Union. I think might be the idea that we're going to undo Brexit is perhaps a little hysterical, but the Eye says Starmer plots course for a softer Brexit. Meanwhile, the Daily Express fears Starmer is plotting a full-blown Brexit betrayal. We'll look at that domestic story later in the show. But at 21 after 7, let's get your voices on about Venezuela. Rob's in Weybridge. Rob, the point you want to make. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yeah, I'm absolutely furious about this. Not just that? With what Trump has done, right, which is, to me, just a complete, you know, unconstitutional thing to do, or I don't know if that's the right word, but yeah, but also our government's response. I was watching Sir Trevor Phillips yesterday. Yes. He had Darren Jones on. Yes. I mean, he could not have not answered a question better. I mean, he was asked 50 different times in different ways, and all he kept on saying is it's not for us as a British government. Well, it is when it's Russia, when it's other countries, when it's China, but because it's Sir Donald, or whatever he wants to call himself.
What did you want a senior representative of His Majesty's government to say on television yesterday?
Well, I wanted them to stand up and say, you know, this is something that you know, is not correct. I mean, you can't just go in. I know they did it with General Noriega in Panama many years ago. But you know, they have a history of putting people in, you know, Saddam Hussein being one, Noriega being another, and then when it doesn't suit them, just doing what they want.
But if you look at Venezuela itself, as I said earlier, inflation's going to be 250%, and the living, yep, standards have gone backwards 75% in the last decade. I think the average Venezuelan might view it slightly differently, Rob.
100% definitely. And you know, I grew up for many years going to Trinidad and Tobago, and the drug,
yep,
and the drug influx there is astronomical. But, I mean, where do you draw the line? I mean, you can't just go in and invade, which it was, another country.
Well, it's not quite an invasion. It's an abduction, isn't it? It's not as if we now have American GIs driving around Caracas. We have currently a Venezuelan
government. With all due respect, Nick, if they suddenly flew into London to pinch Sir Keir Starmer, which probably would be a good thing in many people's eyes, we would class that as an invasion. I would.
Okay. Lastly, if and Sir Ed Davey, the Lib Dem leader, is talking about forcing a vote about illegality of this, if that was to come before the House, which way would you vote? Would you condemn this as a breach of international law, Rob?
I would, 100%. I mean, to me, it's a complete breach, yes.
Okay, sir. Have a good one. Thank you very much for getting started. John, come to you in just a moment. But to show that we are a true global show in every sense of the word, we go to Switzerland and that tragedy, of course, that's played out at that nightclub. Here's the Justice Minister, Beat Jans, visiting the scene in Switzerland yesterday.
It's incredibly emotional to see the place and realise how strong the power of these flames must have been, even on the top floor where I could enter. You can smell it.
Now, 3 days after those celebrations were brought to such a horrific halt, the area fell silent again as loved ones of those who lost their lives in the Constellation Bar were among more than 2,000 mourners who joined a deliberately noiseless march through the sweet streets of the Swiss ski resort. Let's go to Yari Pelati, who's a reporter at Rai TV. That's Italy's public national service broadcaster, who has been reporting from the area. Can you bring us up to date? Good morning to you. Can you bring us up to date? Do we have a final number of those who have lost their lives and those who are injured? Morning to you.
We do, because yesterday was made official that all the 40 missing people were identified as dead. So today, for instance, for my country, it's a mourning day because all the six dead people from Italy are going back to our country. And as it is for all Europe, for all the countries that have lost one, yeah. So we have 40 dead people, 40 victims, and 119 wounded.
119, and I understand, Yari, 80 of those, or 80 plus, have fairly serious burns and other injuries.
And you know how hard it is for people who have extended burns on their skin, because their life condition can be at risk for even weeks. So there is the threat that some of them could pass on.
Yari, we're learning more about the bar and indeed the bar owner. Can you tell my listeners about that?
Yes, it's very interesting that an important French newspaper wrote that this Jacques Moretti, who's a French man from Corse, was indicted 20 years ago for other crimes, for other offences, which is fraud and offences linked to prostitution. It's still not clarified, but it's interesting. It's an interesting data. And now he and his wife, Jessica, are under investigation here for homicide for negligence, arson for negligence, and they are free actually. And yesterday the prosecutor explained that there are no suspicions of that they might go away. They might not go to France. They're staying here. Still, they are under the spot of criminal investigations and the public opinion here.
Lastly, do we know the suggestion that an emergency door, a fire door, was locked and was inoperative, was not working? Have we any more detail on that yet, Yari?
I guess what I've understood so far is that inoperative is the correct word. That is to say, there was an exit door, but it was not very easy to identify it, especially in that panic situation. Yesterday, the Italian ambassador explained it very clearly. Basically, there was no fire exit. There was no anti-panic handle. And it was very hard to see it because there were curtains dividing the main room where people were, where most people were injured or died. And the second room, which was a couloir, they say, a place where you can smoke, with that door. A witness who, he's a hero, actually, one who helped 10 people get away from that trap, said that he had to break in through that door, you know, breaking it, not opening it, from outside.
Grateful for your time, Yari, thank you. Yari Pelati, reporting from Switzerland, journalist at Rai TV, Italy's public national service broadcaster, 7:28 back here in the UK. Let's come back to your reactions, American action over the weekend, indeed, what the future is for Venezuela. John in Enfield. John, what needs to happen next? Good morning.
Oh, hello, Nick. Happy New Year to you.
And to you,
nice Christmas.
Thank you.
Yeah, a few points I'll be trying to be very quick. If Starmer decides to look at international law, whether he's adhered to international law, he's going to have to condemn Trump. That's the first thing, yeah? Mm-hmm. Now, the thing is, before Trump came into power, the U.S. saw the biggest mass migration from Venezuela. And I remember the people at the time that wanted to go into America, they were saying they just couldn't live there because of the gangs, yeah? Mm-hmm. So I feel that whether what's happened is good or bad, something had to be done there. Yeah, so it shows you that there was something very wrong happening in Venezuela.
Well, I think 250% inflation. That gives you an idea what life is like for the normal Venezuelan, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But it's whether that allows Donald Trump to authorize the action that he has But that is the balancing act that I think we have to look at. And the key now is what happens to Venezuela and Venezuelans.
We'll see what happens. But the other thing that they're trying to talk about is the Putin-Ukraine thing and the Americans. Now, Putin is going into Ukraine to make Ukraine a non-country, not even recognise them as Ukrainians, and slaughtering them, and so far has created 180,000 registered war crimes. This is different from what America is doing. At least America is going to be calling Venezuela Venezuela.
It is. But, of course, it'd be good to know that we're going to have a sight to democratic elections. John, thank you for that. Got to go to get to the news. More calls coming in. Chris, you'll be the next caller. And, of course, coming back to domestic affairs, it's pretty chilly out there.
There are warnings of travel chaos as snow sweeps across Britain on the return to work and school following the Christmas break. I'm Jim Dale, founder and senior meteorologist at British Weather Services, and I'll be speaking to Nick shortly.
Yes, it's back to work day for most, but perhaps not back to school day, as there are some closures. More after this. 7:30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, on LBC News Time. Dominic Ellis.
Venezuela's ousted leaders expected to appear in court in New York later to face drugs and weapons charges. American Special Forces seized Nicolas Maduro and his wife in Caracas on Saturday. Officials in Switzerland say they've now identified all 40 people killed in a fire at a ski resort bar on New Year's Day. They include 15-year-old Charlotte Nidham, a former pupil at schools in London and Hertfordshire. And from today, mobile phones and SIM cards can be seized from illegal migrants without needing to arrest them. Ministers are hoping the new powers for Border Force officials will help tackle people smuggling gangs and channel crossings. LBC weather staying very cold but bright for most of the UK. Snow showers for northern Scotland and the north of England. A high of 2 degrees.
LBC.
The famous five are at home, and Julian could barely contain his excitement. "Why are you so excited?" asked George. "Is it your birthday? Is it snowing?" asked Dick. "Are we having treacle sponge tonight?" asked Anne.
"No," said Julian.
"It's the Great GWR Getaway Sale."
The Great GWR Getaway Sale is now on. Hurry, book before January 5th at gwr.com or on the app. Great Western Railway. Adventures start here. Terms apply. Selected routes only. Travel by April 10th.
MJ the Musical, the electrifying Olivier Award-winning hit, now in its final weeks. Featuring the jaw-dropping dance moves and legendary songs of Michael Jackson. Don't miss out. Book now at mjthemusical.com.
EasyJet's Big Orange Sale is now on. New year, new plans, new deals. With up to £400 off package holidays and up to 20% off flights. EasyJet, get out there. Selected dates and flights. Flight sale ends 3rd of Feb, holiday sale ends 3rd of March. Min spend and ATL protected. T's and C's apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
7:32, more of your reactions, of course, to the action in Venezuela, both with the calls and with the emails and the texts. But let's get into the world of finance. Christian May, Editor-in-Chief at City AM. How have the markets reacted to the news on the weekend in Venezuela? Christian, morning to you.
Good morning, Nick. Good to be back with you.
Indeed.
Well, I suppose the result of the news out of Venezuela has been dramatic. The market reaction has so far been quite muted. The principal activity we've seen in the Asian markets as we start our days here in London has been gold having a little bit of a rally, a little bit of a 2% uptick, likewise with silver. And markets, buoyant, stable. And why do we not see the sort of political drama and geopolitical uncertainty reflected in global markets at this stage? Well, there is a watch and wait approach being taken, certainly. The bottom line is that Venezuela's economy was a basket case last week, and it's a basket case this morning. There are big questions about its future, not least as it relates to what impact the recovery, as Trump wants to put it, of the Venezuelan oil industry might have on oil prices. But people are expecting that to take some years to be felt in international oil markets, given the billions and billions of dollars required to restart that fairly crippled industry. So that is a much longer term consideration. As it stands, markets are much more interested in the same sorts of things they were interested in just before Christmas. There's a huge amount of US economic data coming out this week that people feel quite buoyant about. Expectations of further rate cuts in the US that people are buoyant about. And there's still great gains being made in AI, which people still feel quite buoyant about. So notwithstanding the rather uncertain start to the year in geopolitical terms, the markets at the moment seem to be taking the events from Venezuela in their stride.
Let's go to other matters. Food products unknown to you and your children, pizzas, ice cream, chocolates, soft drinks, but an ad ban. Why?
Well, the ban on junk food advertising on TV before 9 p.m. and a total ban for junk food advertising online has legally come into force. Now, let's back up a little bit and consider that this was a Boris Johnson policy. Plans for this crackdown have been in place since 2020. Boris Johnson said it would come into force in 2023. It's actually legally come into force now, although eagle-eyed viewers will have noted that on TV before 9 o'clock, most businesses, companies, food brands have been adhering to this in recent months anyway as a way to get used to it. What are we talking about? We're talking about a ban on advertising an extraordinary range of products. Any kind of sandwich, any kind of breakfast cereal, this sort of stuff is no longer deemed safe or appropriate for viewers before 9 o'clock in the evening. I don't know where that leaves things like Bake Off and MasterChef. I'm not sure they're going to reformulate their shows, let alone their recipes. But it means that people are looking at ways not just to get around this, but to adapt to this new rather heavy-handed regulatory landscape. So there's a huge uptick in billboard advertising, the old-fashioned spend of billboard advertising from fast food firms. But it also means that brands can advertise themselves. They just can't show their products. So, for example, Cadbury's could show its famous drumming gorilla advert. You might remember that. Because they don't show a piece of chocolate in it. And indeed, you know, people like the fast food delivery platforms like Deliveroo and Uber Eats, etc., they tend to be showing off their grocery delivery service, but perhaps just dropping into the viewer's mind that you can also get a burger. But heaven forbid, you won't be allowed to see it.
Can I just check, you are happy in your employment as editor-in-chief at City AM? I make certain of that, Christian, because I'm concerned about research. What happens in January?
Yeah, I'm quite happy. Indeed, I'm eager to get back to it. I'm out in the countryside this morning, and I'm just looking out the window at the snow and hoping very much that the commuter service will get me into the city a short time after you and I finish our conversation. But it is January. People are returning to work, and there's all sorts of surveys and data to try and pin down how Brits feel about returning to work. British workers are, we're told, increasingly unhappy in their jobs in general. Almost 1 in 10 plan to quit their job this January, according to a new survey. Brits are traditionally quite unhappy, quite gloomy lot when it comes to employment compared to international peers. Not you, of course, Nick,
nope.
Not me.
No, but it's the 23rd year I'm starting this year, but do go on, yes.
You're bucking the trend because 37% of those who say they want to quit this month are actually planning to hand in their notice today. So I'm looking forward to rallying my troops when I get into work. Hopefully I won't be met with a deluge of resignation letters. I suppose the interesting thing is that a lot of people saying what they want to do is retrain. About 16% of British workers plan to return to university or college. 24% want to retrain in something completely different. This does come, I should just end by observing that this survey comes out on the same day that a report from the Resolution Foundation has referred to a zombie apocalypse in the UK economy. Now, that sounds worse than it is. What they're talking about is so-called zombie firms that have been struggling to stay alive. Higher interest rates and minimum wage hikes are now combining to kill off these struggling zombie firms that some economists in a rather brutal sense would say should have died long ago. And the theory in economic circles goes that they will disappear and make way for more new productive companies. Well, there you go. There's a reasonably optimistic take on the situation to start the year.
Finally, I've only just learned about Jurgen Klopp and his paddle or paddle. I don't know. Now I've got to learn about pickleball. What the hell is that, Christian? And why are we talking about it?
I find it very hard to believe that you are not already an accomplished pickleball player. It seems to me to be tennis, but with a ping pong bat. I don't know. It's not my game. But David Lloyd, who most people will recognize the name, the eponymous founder of the Gym Group. Well, David Lloyd sold his Gym Group for a couple of hundred million quid back in the 90s. But David Lloyd is still his name. There's nothing you can do about that. Mm. And he now wants to launch a whole new range of pickleball centers and paddleball centers, racket sport facilities across the country. And he wants to call it David Lloyd something or other. Well, David Lloyd Gym have said, you can't do that. That's our name. And he said, well, hang on, it's also my name. Uh-huh. And they're in a bit of a legal tussle about it. So I dare say that this has all the elements of a bit of a corporate farce, but they're now arguing and wrangling over who can call who what and who's the first David Lloyd and whether or not people will be terribly confused by
all sorts of new... When I tried to design a car, do you know I had this? And you'll never guess who you'll never guess who won that one. Christian May, good to see you. I hope not too many people quit at City AM, where Christian is the editor-in-chief. Coming up on 7.40, Chris, you will be the next caller concerning Venezuela. But let's just quickly pick up on the weather, because there are estimated to be something like 250, 260 schools closed. Mostly, I need to tell you, Devon, the West Country, Wales and Scotland. But there will be transport delays, treacherous driving conditions as well. As for many of us, of course, it's, as me, I'm included, and I appreciate many of you put in a shift during the Christmas and New Year, and I hope you got as much rest as you can, but for me it was back to work today, and for some it's back to school, but as I say, 260 that won't be going back to school. Jim Dale, founder and senior meteorologist at British Weather Services, runs us over the latest. What you got, Jim? Morning.
Hi, good morning, Nick. Yeah, what a good at the moment. Well, the snow that's actually falling is northern Scotland, Northern Ireland, North Wales, northeast England, a little bit down in the southwest. Everywhere else more or less dry, but ice is the major problem this morning for many of us, all lying snow one or the other. It's not the easiest to go back to work or go into school day, obviously. You know, the Arctic Airstream is in situ, will remain in situ for the next 48-72 hours. I need to warn people though, later this week, Thursday evening into Friday, forget about just what I said, because the smorgasbord of weather is on its way in terms of heavy snow, freezing temps, freezing fog, ice, heavy snow, freezing rain, heavy rain, high winds. Care of the potential and it yet to be named Storm Chandra, which is going to bowl its way in on Thursday evening and into Friday. So that is the next named storm. If it does get named by the Met Office, at the moment, I think it will do. But it's got everything within it. Snow, particularly for the Midlands northwards at this moment in time. Heavy rain for the south. So we'll watch that one and report back.
Jim, thanks. Jim Dale, founder and senior meteorologist at British Weather Services. 7.41 to Chris in Richmond, who's been hanging on the line. Your reaction to events on the weekend. Good morning.
Yeah, well, Nick, I've been to Venezuela before for work. Well, Venezuelan friends. I mean, no one's going to be sad and lament the departure of Maduro, given how bad things were there.
Indeed.
But what comes next, I think, is the point, right? Especially Colombia. You know, he's starting to threaten Colombia, he's starting to threaten Greenland. I mean, where does international law stop and start? It's very hypocritical for us to say, don't go into Taiwan, China. Don't do anything in Ukraine, Russia, when you're running around taking people out of their countries who've been... Whether you agree or not with the election results.
As John said, it's not akin to Putin and Ukraine, though, is it, and Russian action there, and in reality, Chris? Then that's a false comparison, surely.
Well, I mean, it's basically... If you look in the past, every time the US has tried to get involved in Afghanistan or Iraq or Libya, or even Central America, it's never ended well.
Panama... I would argue Panama it has. It has the most successful economy now in Latin America. But you are right. If you look at Afghanistan, if you look at Iraq, you're probably too young. But if you look at Vietnam, absolutely appalling outcomes, each and every one.
Yeah, no, look, at the end of the day, what has to happen is the Venezuelan people ultimately have to be the arbiters of this. But let's be clear, this is not about drugs, because the flow of drugs to Venezuela is much, much lower than through Mexico. And then he's gone and Trump has pardoned the former Honduran president.
So you think it's solely oil? It's oil and its economy, is what you're saying, Chris.
Well, and geopolitics as well. He obviously wants to choke off the supply of oil to China and Russia, because obviously Venezuela and China and Russia are a bit of a...
But isn't that a good thing? If legitimate government is allowed to form, and it is a sizable if, Chris, I hear what you're saying, but if a legitimate government is formed that chokes off some oil supplies to China and actually allows Venezuelans, and you've been there, I haven't, Venezuelans, surely that's a positive.
Well, I think the time will tell.
Yep.
To be honest with you, but I think the point is where do you go next? Because China is investing in so much infrastructure in Africa. Are we going to pick a country in Africa next? What is it if you go into Greenland, which is a NATO country? I mean, God knows what that brings for the rest of us. And I feel very sorry for the Prime Minister now. He's between a rock and a hard place.
Why? He did want the job. It's not like he's strong-armed into it. He wanted the job.
But in terms of Trump, what is he supposed to say? If he accuses and condemns him, as that David wants him to do, of doing the wrong thing and breaking international law at the same time, dealing with someone who's frankly pretty mentally unstable, how's that going to help the relationship?
Donald Trump has broken international law.
Of course he has.
So if Starmer says, I'm a big fan of international law, I think he put it more delicately than that, then, well, it's quite clear what he's done, no? Is that not right, do you think?
Well, yeah, but I think it's easy for Nick Ferrari or Nigel Farage, people that are not actually in number 10, having to negotiate with this. Frankly, I'm going to use the word lunatic, which he is a lunatic. If you're in a position of power, he has to manage to get the guy's got ego the size of the planet. We have the awful situation of where Zelensky was treated last year, and then the nauseating scenario of him having a state banquet with the king. It's just,
You don't know. Chris, I've enjoyed speaking with you. Be well. Thank you. More calls coming in on this, including you. Khalid, we'll try and get to you. You've been hanging on the line. Let's come back to matters affecting the Prime Minister. Here he is speaking with the BBC yesterday over our relationship with our friends in Europe.
If it's in our national interest to have even closer alignment with the single market, then we should consider that. We should go that far.
That's coming up in the next hour. Coming up after the news, mobile phones will be seized from migrants without need to prior arrest. That's coming in as of today. You'll hear more from the relevant government minister. 7:45 LBC News headlines then. Dominic Ellis.
President Trump has again insisted his administration is in charge of Venezuela following the US raid that seized the country's leader. A former pupil at a British school has been confirmed as one of the 40 people killed in a fire at a Swiss ski resort on New Year's Day. And UK Border Force officers will be able to seize the mobile phones of illegal migrants without having to make arrests. LBC weather staying very cold but bright for most of the UK. Snow showers for northern Scotland and northern England. A high of 2 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Slightly better news on the M25 clockwise at the QE2 bridge. All the lanes are back open now. It's still very slow though from about 2 miles before junction 30 at the A13. Also on the M25, there are clockwise queues to junction 6 at Godstone. That's where a car's broken down. And the A1M's slow southbound to junction 7 at Stevenage South. A car's broken down, so one lane is closed for recovery. Just north of Marble Arch, the A5 Edgware Road remains closed both ways. And also in Roehampton, Danebury Avenue is closed both ways because of the ice. On the underground, the district line is suspended between Turnham Green and Richmond, and there are minor delays on the Victoria and Bakerloo lines, and no Mild May line running between Richmond and Willesden Junction.
LBC.
At Kia, we have an award-winning range of electric cars for you to discover. From the compact SUV, the Kia EV3, and our latest hatchback, the Kia EV4, to our stylish new Kia EV5, the all-electric family SUV. Discover what driving electric really means. And if you order any Kia electric car by March 31st, you'll enjoy your first 2 services free. Search Discover Your Kia EV to book your test drive today.
Kia. Movement that inspires.
T's and C's apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
Did you know Vets for Pets are
the nation's most trusted vets?
We think that's because they're
locally owned
and locally loved.
Wherever you are,
we've got a vet local to you.
Vets for Pets. We're all for pets. Based on a survey. To verify, search vetsforpets.com/allforpets.
The famous five were at home, and Julian could barely contain his excitement.
Why are you so excited? Asked George. Is it your birthday? Is it snowing? Asked Dick. Are we having treacle sponge tonight? Asked Anne.
No, said Julian. It's the Great GWR Getaway Sale.
The Great GWR Getaway Sale is now on. Hurry, book before January 5th at gwr.com or on the app. Great Western Railway. Adventures start here. Terms apply. Selected routes only. Travel by April 10th.
Quick question. Well, actually 3. But they are quick. 1. Do you have a car? 2. Are you looking to save on your car insurance? And 3. Do you have a Tesco club card? Well, if you do, you could get exclusive club card prices when you take out or renew a policy with Tesco Car Insurance. And with 3 levels of cover available, you can choose the one that's right for you. Over a million club card members are already saving money. So just search online for Tesco Car Insurance.
New year, new you. Maybe. New year, new car. Definitely. Upgrade your year with a new Vauxhall Frontera Electric or any car from our award-winning range. With 0% APR over 4 years with a minimum 20% deposit and £1,000 off on top of all other offers. That's a resolution worth sticking to. Search Vauxhall today. £1,000 saving on new car orders until the January 2026. Personal contract purchase, 20% deposit, 18 plus. Subject to status and availability. T's and C's, Stellantis Financial Services.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Time is 7:49. We'll come back to our conversation concerning that action in Venezuela in a moment. Now, as I said earlier, it's back to work for many of us today, myself included, and I hope if you were working over Christmas and New Year, you had some kind of a break. And it's back to work with a different sort, also as regards migrants, as their phones and SIM cards will now be seized without need of prior arrest as part of efforts to tackle the number of channel crossings. Here with more detail is Labour MP and Minister for Migration and Citizenship, Mike Tapp. Minister, thank you for coming on the show. A little more detail of what comes into effect as of today. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Nick, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, sir.
This is a really important measure. It's not the silver bullet, by the way, but it's a part of the counter-terror powers that we're bringing in. Now, I've worked against criminal gangs in the past, but also in a counter-terror role, so I've seen the difference this makes. It means that we don't have to wait for a crime to be committed before taking action, so that we can get to them before they act. And a part of that is in the announcement today, meaning we can seize phones from migrants that come across on small boats so that we can download them and then glean that intelligence that can help us go after more smuggling gangsters. We've already disrupted thousands of actions over the past year and a half. We've arrested hundreds of gangsters, and this will help feed that intelligence picture to make it more efficient. We can then work with our international partners to take them on.
Although this won't act as a deterrent, will it, Minister?
This isn't a part of deterrent. This is about taking on the smuggling gangs. It's a part of a package. We've seen that we're making it less attractive to come here with our asylum changes to reduce that asylum shopping. We're making it easier to remove and deport people with changes to the legal side of things. We're looking at safe and legal routes to ensure that there's other routes here, and now we're introducing these counter-terror powers. We've also deported and removed 50,000. We're moving people out of hotels and into military-styled accommodation. So there's a lot of work going on here. It's not one bit of policy that will fix this, but together, I'm really confident it will have an impact.
You reference you've done counter-terror work in the past. What sort of work was that, Minister?
Well, that's about ensuring that people on the streets of Britain are safer by working upstream and domestically to target those who want to cause harm to us. So I've used these counter-terror powers efficiently. I've seen how effective they are, and I'm really excited that the Border Security Command, the National Crime Agency, get to use them. And I remember meeting with the leader of the DG at the NCA, who said that he was enthusiastic about these powers to ensure that they are fully equipped to take on the smuggling gangs.
Isn't there a danger these folk will just toss their phones into the channel?
Well, look, no measure is perfect, but that's not get in the way of the good, Nick. It's about empowering us to do as much as we possibly can, and seizing those phones means we will gather more intelligence and make our operations more effective.
Yes, I mean, we're having this conversation. You know the figures are in for last year, the number of people who crossed the channel. It's the second highest figure ever at 41,472. You're not winning the war at the moment, are you?
Well, there's a long way to go, and I've said this, I think, on your show before, that we're frustrated, and as the public are, at how long it takes to even legislate. You know, we're seeing powers starting to come in just today that we attempted or started legislating for around 10 months a year ago. And that's, you know, wider as well when it comes to employment rights, workers' rights. A lot of what we've been legislating for will start to come into effect this year, so people will start to see them have an impact.
One thing that did come into effect last year, 2025, was the one-out deal. How's that going? What are the latest figures on that?
This is a pilot scheme, Nick. We're around 200 each way. There will be an updated figure coming soon, but it's around 200 each way. And, you know, it is a pilot. It needs to grow more in order to have more of a deterrent effect. But what it does is it starts to seed that doubt in a migrant's mind when they're sat in Calais paying up to 10k to make that crossing, that they could be removed or deported almost immediately.
It didn't seed much doubt in 41,472 migrants, did it?
Well, those a number of those were obviously before this.
Your scheme came in August. So since August, I've got the figures here. It's 193 have been returned, which is exactly what you said, around 200. 193 returned, 195 in since August, or operative since September. That's more than a quarter. It's hardly knockout figures, is it?
And this is the complexity of schemes like this. We need to iron out the legal issues and the technical issues, the operational issues, and then seek to grow. And that's obviously what we're working hard at in the Home Office. As it grows, the deterrence also grows.
All right. As we have the Benjamin on the line, can you give us an update for the British government's response or position as regards US activities in Venezuela, Minister?
Well, firstly, it's not a bad thing that this dictator is no longer in charge in Venezuela. He kidnapped dissidents, he tortured people, he used sexual violence. So for him to not be there is positive for the people of Venezuela. What's important now is that we see a safe, peaceful, democratic transition for the people of Venezuela. And we've made it clear, the Prime Minister's made it clear, that international rules and legality is always at the heart of what we do as a country.
But surely President Trump has breached international law, hasn't he, Minister?
Well, we're still waiting to see that legal basis laid out by the United States for its operation.
What do you need to know?
Look, this is the complexity of an operation, having been involved in many in the past. That,
Dictators have you kidnapped?
That's a good question. None, Nick. None. Right.
we know the who, what, where, when, why, how. I mean, so what is there to determine?
To clarify, Nick, I'm talking about my military experience. That there's often many complexities to that. So we do need the United States to lay out the legal basis for its operation.
So you can see, lastly, Minister, you can see a route by which this does adhere to international law.
Well, this is it's really difficult to say at this point, which is why we need to see the United States lay out that legal basis. We've got to keep talking to our allies and talk to the United States. But the Prime Minister's been really clear that international law and legality is at the very foundation.
Okay, lastly, Mr. Tapp, what could possibly be the circumstances that this was legally justified?
And I don't want to try and preempt what the United States might come with for their legal basis. It's for them to do, not for me.
But US military personnel went into another country to abduct its leader. That has to be a breach of international... Nick, I'm not saying I'm against it, by the way, but it has to be a breach.
We're always under pressure in the modern age to make comments quickly. It's only been 48
hours.
I'd say it's only been 48 hours, and I think that's a demonstration of the modern age.
Well, if you're a military bloke, you know, 48 hours is a long time. You can win or lose a war in 48 hours.
It is a short period of time, particularly with these sort of complex operations. Let's wait for the United States to lay out its legal basis. That's what needs to happen.
Happy New Year. Thanks for your time. Mike Tapp joining us there to give us more details on how those phones will be taken. He's the Minister for Migration and Citizenship. 3 before 8 is the time. Khalid, thank you for hanging on the line. My apologies, it's taken so long. Khalid in Leicester, your reaction to the events that we've witnessed and indeed what should happen now. Good morning, sir.
Yeah, I think we should rip up the international law book.
Rip
it up, because I mean, look, there's immunity for some countries and condemnation when other countries break international law.
Right.
This hypocrisy and arrogance is absolutely appalling. Why is it that, you know, America and its allies, so-called allies, you can say, right, they justify...
Is it a good thing if democracy was returned to Venezuela?
When you say democracy, I mean, I've been to Venezuela myself many years ago now, but still, the situation then is just the same as it is today. There's no change.
Today they're labouring under 270% inflation.
Yeah, but what I'm saying, even then, when I was there, people used to live in the mountains, come down, rob, steal, and pillage.
But if we look at where we find ourselves now, which is at the last so-called presidential election, it was suspended because the opposition leader had double the votes of the man who decided to see, and members of his party were sent to jail, never to be seen again. Surely we would welcome an attempt to put that right, wouldn't we? Yes?
within diplomacy, that would be ideal, because even Maduro himself stated before this audacious and arrogant action that America has taken, he even stated that I'm ready for dialogue. But they forget dialogue. They didn't even wait for his dialogue.
Do you really believe him? Would you really believe that he was ready for dialogue?
Well, do you believe Sunak? Do you believe Starmer? Do you believe in Netanyahu? Do you believe what Netanyahu says?
I wonder why you've decided to take us from Venezuela to Israel, Khalid. Why would you choose to do that?
Why would I choose that? Because you are supporting, you're an ally of Israel. That's where the problem lies. You're an ally of...
But if we can just limit the conversation to Venezuela, as I said at the top, as I said right at the start, shed no tears for the fact that Maduro has gone. The key now is what happens. I can hear you have a little one in the background. Let's allow you more time to look after him or her. Thank you for your input and thanks for hanging on the line. We will have more calls on that. But let's move to other matters. And was this a bombshell yesterday from the Prime Minister speaking with the BBC?
Now we've done deals with India, which are in our national interest. We are better looking to the single market rather than the customs union for our further alignment.
So what is the distinction between the single market and the customs union? Plus the TUC saying that we need to cut down on work stress or stress in working conditions. How exactly would they define stress? And... tragedy for pop star Jessie Nelson, saying her twin baby daughters have a muscle-wasting disease which will leave them disabled for life. Those stories and more after the 8 o'clock news.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 8 o'clock, Venezuela's ousted leaders expected to appear in court in New York later to face drugs and weapons charges. American special forces seized Nicolas Maduro and his wife in Caracas on Saturday. Here, Anza Keir Starmer is under pressure from some of his own MPs to oppose the US action. Speaking to Nick, the Home Office Minister Mike Tapp refused to say whether he thought American strikes broke international law.
We've got to keep talking to our allies and talk to the United States, but the Prime Minister's been really clear that international law and legality is at the very foundation.
Okay, lastly, Mr. Tapp, what could possibly be the circumstances that this was legally justified?
And I don't want to try and preempt what the United States might come with for their legal basis. It's for them to do, not for me.
Officials in Switzerland say they've now identified all 40 people killed in a fire at a ski resort bar on New Year's Day. They include the 15-year-old Charlotte Nidham, a former pupil at schools in London and Hertfordshire. The teenager had been working as a babysitter in the Crans, Montana area. From today, mobile phones and SIM cards can be seized from illegal migrants without needing to arrest them. Ministers are hoping the new powers for Border Force officials will help tackle people smuggling gangs. Hundreds of schools in northern Scotland closed this morning where amber warnings for snow are in force. There are less severe yellow alerts in place for much of the rest of the UK. Meteorologist at British Weather Service's Jim Dale has told Nick that the cold weather is set to continue into the weekend.
The smorgasbord of weather is on its way in terms of heavy snow, freezing temps, freezing fog, ice, heavy snow, freezing rain. Care of the potential and it yet to be named Storm Chandra, which is going to bowl its way in on Thursday evening and into Friday.
A ban on advertising some unhealthy foods online and on television has come into effect as part of efforts to tackle childhood obesity. Ads featuring items high in fat, salt and sugar will only be allowed on TV after 9 o'clock at night. And England's cricketers have had a mixed day. Two of the final Ashes test against Australia. Ben Stokes' side were bowled out for 384 in Sydney, but Australia fought back and were on 166 for two before rain brought an end to play for a second day. In the city, the FTSE 100 has just reopened at 99.51. It closed up 19 on Friday. The pound buys $1.35 and a euro 15. LBC weather staying very cold for most of the UK today. Snow showers continuing for northern Scotland and northern England with a high of 7 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
It's another day at Screwfix, and Sir Mo Farah is still getting to grips with things.
So, Mo, with Sprint Delivery, we get the order to them in as little as 20 minutes. Okay. Mo?
Mo? Done. He was on the 18th floor.
Nice work. But, you know we use delivery riders, right?
Oh, now you tell me.
Sprint it in as little as 20 minutes. Screwfix. No stopping you. Conditions and geographical restrictions apply.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, 3 minutes after eight on Monday, January the 5th. For some, it's a Brexit betrayal. For others, it's closer and better trading links with the European Union. We'll be laying out all the details and, of course, most importantly, asking for your view. Plus, what might the government's view be on that action taken by Donald Trump in Venezuela? Well, within the last 15 minutes or so, Minister for Migration and Citizenship, he's the government minister on the round, Mike Tapp explained...
We're always under pressure in the modern age to make comments quickly. It's only
well,
been 48
hours.
It's only been, well, I'd say it's only been 48 hours, and I think that's a demonstration of the
well,
modern age.
If you're a military bloke, you know, 48 hours is a long time. You can win or lose a war in 48 hours. They are clearly between a rock and a hard place, aren't they? We'll continue that conversation. Tragedy for the former Little Mix star, Jesse Nelson, putting this video message on social media yesterday.
Long story short, after the most grueling... 3-4 months. The girls have now been diagnosed with a severe muscle disease called SMA type 1.
Yes, spinal muscular atrophy. Those little ones, well, it doesn't look like they'll ever walk. They might be confined to wheelchairs effectively for the rest of their what could be short lives. It's about as tough as it can be, and sympathy enormously. How have you coped with a shocking diagnosis like that? Must have rocked you to the core for your child, or in this case, it's yours. Your children coping with disability at that level. And in other news, coping in the workplace? The TUC says work stress is at a crisis level and bosses need to be more, do more. But how would you define stress? We'll talk to the head of the TUC.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
As I said right at the start of this conversation, it's either an attempt to try and bring back closer ties with the European Union, which will help trade, help boost trade, help possibly boost employment, and the economy, and goodness knows we could do with that, or, rather more punchy, but I don't know necessarily this is accurate, it's a Brexit betrayal. It all stems from that interview with the BBC yesterday, Sir Keir Starmer.
I think we should get closer, and if it's in our national interest, in our interest, to have even closer alignment with the single market, then we should consider that. We should go that far. We're already aligning on energy, reconnecting to energy in Europe, on emissions, but I think the single market, further alignment, as I say, if it's in our interest to do so, we should take that step. If you look at the deal we've already done with the EU on food and agriculture, we're aligning our rules so that we can access the single market. So that's a sovereign decision that we've made as a government that is in our interest to do so. What I'm saying is there are other areas where we should consider whether it's in our interest to do the same and align with the single market.
Well, let's get some background, and then, of course, most importantly to your view, Al Pinkerton is Europe spokesperson for the Liberal Democrats and a Lib Dem MP and joins me now. I guess if I may, Mr. Pinkerton, and I know you'll be able to do this, can you just explain to my listeners the difference, what we have with a customs union and a single market? If briefly you could outline that first. Morning to you.
Good morning to you and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, sir.
And to all of your listeners. So just before Christmas, I proposed that the UK joins a bespoke customs union with the European Union because from what I hear from manufacturers and businesses up and down the country, that is most what they need. The problem that we have for them is problems at our borders, huge amount of increased paperwork, which means that goods can't travel easily from the UK into Europe and Europe into the UK. And so a customs union would eliminate the paperwork, would eliminate the tariffs and the quotas that are such a problem at our borders. A single market, which was also your question, is a much more comprehensive package of regulatory alignment, regulatory enforcement. It would almost certainly involve oversight from the European Court of Justice in order to make all of those things happen. It's a much more comprehensive integration of our economies. And I have to say, I did find it quite curious that yesterday Keir Starmer announced that he would be quite happy to be potentially aligned with the single market, but very much actively opposed the idea of a customs union, which is exactly the thing that I hear from businesses that they really need in order to make their businesses thrive and grow again.
Expand on that, if you would, Mr. Pinkman. Why the surprise or possibly even dismay?
Well, he seemed to pin this all on the new trade deals that the UK has negotiated. So a customs union would require the UK to join a customs territory. It would set common customs rules. And that would mean that we would forgo the trade deals that the UK has done since Brexit. But of course, many of the trade deals that have been done since Brexit by the UK are in fact direct replicas of what the European Union already has. You hear tale about the Australia and New Zealand deals. They add about 0.1% to the UK economy, for example. They wouldn't even be considered material by the OBR if they were being asked to cost them up in terms of the economic benefit that they provide. Whereas what we know is that given that half of the UK's trade is done with the European Union, removing those customs barriers between the UK and Europe would pay dividends many times over.
You mentioned that you moved a bill last month, I think it was.
I did.
How did that fare?
Well, it was an extraordinary parliamentary moment. Being a kind of backbench MP, you don't have many tools at your disposal. So a 10-minute rule bill is one of the ones that we have access to. And I won by a single vote. In fact, the Deputy Speaker had to break a tie. The first tie, in fact, since 2019. When Brexit was being discussed, and apparently the time before that was the Maastricht Treaty. So for some reason, the issue of Europe constantly leads to ties in the House of Commons.
Can I put it to you, it went to VAR, and you were successful. The VAR came down on your side, Mr. Pinkerton.
Well, it's not. I don't often put much faith in VAR, or the Snicko, frankly, this Ashes tour. But no, it came out in my favour this
time. So what happens now? What do you hope it would lead to?
Well, in many ways, I think the Prime Minister's announcement yesterday is kind of one of the things that I'd hope to do, and that is to create a conversation around this, to push forward a positive case for why our economy needs to be more closely aligned to our biggest trading partner. A 10-minute rule bill is in many ways a piece of parliamentary performance. You can score a particular victory, but sadly there's not really a next round other than in changing the conditions in which conversations happen. So I hope that's what's happening here, because frankly, businesses in where you live and where I live and up and down the country really need this to happen. And just to be clear, this is not in going into a customs union. This is not about rejoining the European Union. This is just responding very clearly and very pragmatically to the economic concerns of businesses up and down this country. And surely that's what we all want, because we all want economic growth right now.
Lastly, to those who'll say, he sounds a decent enough bloke, he had a win in December, but the reality is it is the slippery slope. We will somehow start reversing Brexit. Mr. Pinkerton, how would you respond?
Well, I mean, I think that is for the public to determine.
So they're not wrong to say that then, Mr. Pinkerton?
Well, I think that the polls are suggesting that the British public are keen to see a closer relationship with Europe. I hear that from businesses. Parliament, admittedly only by a majority of one, gave its thumbs up to a slight closening in the form of my customs union. But I think it's for the public to be watchful and to determine what they want. If they feel that Britain is going further and faster than they feel comfortable with, then they will absolutely let that be known at the ballot box. But I think what the British public fundamentally want is they want the cost of living tackled, they want our taxes to come down, they want economic growth to return to this country. And what I hear from businesses up and down the country is that a customs union will go a long way to deliver some of the conditions in which that may become possible.
Grateful for your time. Al Pinkerton, you're a Lib Dem MP and Europe spokesperson, and you had that win in December, 12 after 8. Listening to that is Sir John Redwood, former single market minister of the United Kingdom, long-serving former Conservative MP, and indeed recently received an elevation on his way to the House of Lords. Congratulations to you, Sir John. The only job left now is the Archbishop of Canterbury, and it can only be a ways off. How concerned are you by this idea that we could be down How concerned are you? We could be going down a so-called slippery slope, Sir John. Morning.
Well, good morning. I think it's extremely bad news for the country, and it would be another reason why the Prime Minister would end up even less popular than he is today if he pursues this course. But let's just unpick this customs union idea you've been trying to explore with a fairly unforthcoming Liberal Democrat spokesman. A customs union is a system to put tariffs on the rest of the world for anyone trying to export things to us from outside the customs union. So when we left the European Union customs union, we had two big wins, which the government did secure. The first was We took all the tariffs off items that were raw materials or components that our manufacturers need to make things from non-EU sources. There are lots of them, and that made them a bit more competitive and helped get prices down a bit because we were no longer having to pay extra taxes on imports we needed for our manufacturers. And we also took all the tariffs off items that we cannot make or grow for ourselves, because we were having to impose tariffs on all these things coming in from non-EU sources. And so that was a win for consumers. So there's a small improvement in the rate of price inflation. There were some actual reductions because tariffs were coming down or coming off for these items from outside the EU. So it would be complete self-harm and contradictory to the government's stated policy of wanting to tackle the cost of living, to go back into the customs union and immediately having to oppose a whole series of tariffs on imports from non-EU sources.
I'm just thinking on behalf of my listeners, Sir John, when they hear you say prices would come down a bit, I don't know that they have in my supermarket, Sir John.
No, I said there was a price effect because the tariffs came down. There was a general inflation going on at the time for a variety of bad reasons of Bank of England policy and general economic policy and COVID lockdowns. But the fact is you would get the reverse effect, I can assure you. If we went back into the customs union, the tariffs would go back on, and so those items being imported from non-EU sources would go up. I'm sure your listeners will believe that.
I mean,
it's always the bad news that comes through and you don't see or feel the good news.
Yes, noting that regrettably, it didn't fall to you or people like you to actually engineer or to prosecute the Brexit. Are you still going to tell me that it is a success when you speak with traders and they hear delays in Dover and all sorts of issues trying to get goods into or out of the EU?
Well, of course, Brexit overall is a great success because it gives us the opportunity to change policies and improve the prospects for our country. And it restores self-government. The disappointment for me and other Brexiteers is we haven't had governments bold enough yet to use those freedoms in a way which would promote growth much more quickly. But I could give you two examples of tariff removal, which was good news. The biggest good news from Brexit was, of course, we did save that $15 billion plus a year that we were having to send as a membership fee. And that is now a full saving we're getting. And if we were back in the EU, we would have a much bigger deficit than we've got today, because we would not only be having to meet even bigger membership fees, but we would also be partly responsible for the colossal 800 billion euro debt, which the EU is currently drawing down, which we have dodged by not being in the EU.
Lastly, you don't recognise the research that shows that Brexit has lowered British GDP, reduced trade, decreased investment, put our GDP down by some 7%. You don't recognise those figures, Sir John?
Well, those figures are completely misleading. The 8% figure, it says that if we performed as strongly as America, we'd be 8% better off. Well, that's undoubtedly true. But the EU performed even worse than we did. The reason we didn't perform in line with America is we haven't dumped enough of the high taxes and silly laws of the EU to catch up with America. And we were just hearing from the Lib Dem and from the Prime Minister, they want to be part of this energy market. That will mean even higher taxes and dearer energy prices, because the whole point of the EU is to tax carbon much more extremely even than we do. Okay. And so that would be another force for ill, because it would mean dearer energy, not cheaper energy.
Grateful as ever for your time. Good speaking to you. Congratulations again, Sir John Wedgwood, a former single market minister of the United Kingdom, long-serving Conservative MP. We're late to the news. You've heard what you need to. I'm sure you can get involved now. 17 after 8. Let's get those headlines on LBC. Dominic Ellis.
Venezuela's ousted leaders expected to appear in court in New York later to face drugs and weapons charges. A former pupil at a British school has been confirmed as one of the 40 people killed in a fire at a Swiss ski resort on New Year's Day. And UK Border Force officers will be able to seize the mobile phones of illegal migrants from today without having to make arrests. LBC weather staying very cold for much of the UK. Snow showers continuing for northern Scotland and northern England. A high of 7 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Traffic is being held on the M23 southbound between the M25 and Junction 9 at Gatwick Airport, and that's where a van's broken down. So if you're heading that way to the airport, do allow yourself extra time. Long delays on the A1M southbound to Junction 7 at Stevenage South because a lorry's broken down. Just north of Marble Arch, the A5 Edgware Road remains closed both ways, and that's because of the ongoing investigation. On the underground, the District Line is suspended between Turnham Green and Richmond, and the Mildmay Line is suspended between Richmond and Willesden Junction. Also on the underground, there are minor delays on the Victoria and Bakerloo lines, and southeastern trains are delayed heading up towards Charing Cross.
This is LBC.
There's one green bottle sat on my fridge shelf. This green and white bottle that supports my gut health. Beautiful by nature and beautiful by name. It's the tastiest way to up my gut health game.
Biotiful Gut Health. Upgrade your yogurt to the UK's number one kefir and reset your gut health with Biotiful. Kefir is a source of calcium which contributes to the normal function of digestive enzymes. For verification of UK's number one kefir, see biotifulgutthealth.com/radio.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973 LBC.
This is what award-winning customer service sounds like from Real Octopus Energy Calls.
I've dealt with many utility companies for many years across several properties, and Octopus are an absolute breath of fresh air.
Octopus Energy, great value and outstanding customer service, recommended by Which? 8 years running.
Every investor has a future in mind, whether it's seeing your kids through uni or picturing yourself retiring in Tuscany. The hard part can be knowing how to get there. JP Morgan Personal Investing can help you see the path ahead. With our intuitive app, expert support, and 150 years of JP Morgan's investing experience, you can start making more informed investment decisions today. Search JP Morgan Personal Investing. Invest with clarity. Capital at risk.
Thanks for the key deliverables, David. Now, who'd like to... That's brilliant. So, okay, sales targets. Are we hitting it?
The dance floor! Party time! Woo-hoo!
There's more than one you, and with Specsavers 2-for-1, you can choose glasses for at least two yous. From £70 with standard single-vision lenses.
Nice moves, David!
Book an appointment at specsavers.co.uk. Conditions apply.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973.
20 minutes after 8, we're not going to have a conversation about Brexit, I assure you, but we are going to have a conversation about the idea that the Prime Minister does. And of course we want to be friendly with our EU. It makes absolute sense to be friendly with your neighbours, doesn't it? But how far should that go as regards the idea of a customs union? Tony's in Cheshunt. Tony, you're on the radio. Your reaction. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Hello. And Happy New Year.
And to you, sir. Let's hope it's a good one.
Indeed, yeah. Not too sure what to make of anything that Starmer says these days. I think if he told me the sky was blue, I'd have to look up.
He's not having a good run, is he? He's really...
No, he isn't. And anything to do with Europe worries me, because joining the customs union, fine. If the UK can benefit from it, that'd be great. Mm-hmm. But anything other than that, and as soon as I hear rejoining the EU, I just start to worry, because I'm Italian, and all my family in Italy say that joining the euro was the worst thing that happened to Italy mm-hmm. at the time. It took many, many years to get over it. And we'd have to consider, well, if we do go back and join Europe, then it would be on their terms. We would probably be a net contributor, would have to join the euro. What would happen to him? It would be a minefield. And I would just get extremely worried. I just don't trust them.
You wouldn't want any kind of trading alliance whatsoever, Tony. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I'm not saying that. A trading alliance is a trading alliance, and it has to work both ways. And everything we hear in the media and on the news is fishing rights, we're losing this, we're losing that. Our powers of negotiation just seem to be really, really poor. Whether you're Tory, whether you vote Tory or Labour, we just always seem to get the raw end of the deal.
But, Tony, is it powers or is it our personnel? And we haven't fielded particularly good people. But, and by I mean across the board. I mean Conservatives, Labour, Lib Dems. I think, by and large, we've fielded some real shockers.
Absolutely, Yeah, and it is personnel. I would have to agree with you. It doesn't matter what flavour of party's in power. We just never seem to benefit from anything we do.
You've got family in Italy. Would you ever see, I don't know, would it be an it exit? I don't know if we can quite get there, but you know what I'm saying. Would you ever see a growing sense of frustration? Because I'm aware of who, of course, the Prime Minister is, a growing sense of frustration with the European Union?
They do have a growing sense of frustration with the European Union, but families are also split as well. Same sort of problem we got here. Huge Maloney supporters. One family, huge Maloney supporters, and then people that are anti-Maloney. That's how personal everybody takes this. It's a very, very personal thing. And I think the only way to look at this is from an economic perspective. Because if you look at it any other way, you're going to get it wrong.
Yeah. Lastly, if you stop 10 people on Rome High Street and talked about the idea of some kind of departure from the European Union, would it come 5-5?
Oh, I think it'd be a 50-50 thing, yeah.
I think it probably would. Tony, best wishes to the family. Thank you very much. I spent some time in Europe this holidays, and I was in France, and there's very similar sentiment about the Euro, not huge support. I wouldn't say that they'd want to quit the European Union, not that for a moment, but if you look at the situation here, there is undoubtedly, it has done enormous, enormous damage to many trades. The Brexit that many people hoped would be delivered was not. But then it probably wasn't a very good idea, to the point I just made with Tony, to field people who didn't believe in it. I mean, that was madness from Boris Johnson and others, wasn't it? I tell you what, let's get a bunch of people to negotiate who don't actually believe what they're negotiating for. That'd be like trying to buy a house when you didn't want the damn thing. But one reality, despite, and it has, of course, it's cost jobs, and of course it's cost money, and of course it's cost GDP. And with the greatest respect for Sir John Redwood to suggest it hasn't, it's just not looking at the facts. But one thing you do have to cling on to is that at the time of Brexit, let's just give you some numbers. Numbers are so important. GDP of the United Kingdom was 2.4. GDP of the European Union was 2.6. GDP of the United States was 2.4. Where do we find ourselves now? The GDP of the United Kingdom last week was minus 0.1. In the European Union, it's 0.2. And the United States is 3.8. There was an opportunity. If the deals had been done, there was an opportunity. We might return to that. But let's come to other matters. And a story I mentioned earlier reports that at least 30 dangerous mental health patients secretly freed from high-security hospitals have gone on to kill in recent years. This is a report on the front page of today's Daily Telegraph. Around 250 violent offenders are detained in institutions, you've probably heard of some of these, such as Broadmoor and Rampton, and also Ashworth, after courts decided they're too mentally ill to go to jail. Many, like Valdo Calacane, you may recall he was the person who killed three people in Nottingham, two university students and a caretaker who was approaching retirement. Calacane are told their conditions are so acute they are unlikely to ever be freed. But the newspapers obtained figures revealing an astonishing 55% of those sent to secure hospitals are discreetly freed within 5 years, almost 90% within 10 years, and 99% within 20 years. So how do you know whether your neighbour might be one of those people? To Julian Hendy, who's founder and CEO of 100 Families, and joins me now. Can I ask you to explain what 100 Families, I have a note, but you'll put it far better than I, what 100 Families is all about. Morning to you.
Morning, Nick. 100 Families is a charity that supports families after mental health-related homicides. We are victims of most terrible crimes imaginable, yet the support and information that we get is severely restricted because of the people that kill our loved ones. So we support families and we work with the agencies to try and improve services.
The work that you've done has informed the Daily Telegraph piece, I understand. Give us a little bit more background on those figures, if you would, Julian.
We know that there are around 100 to 120 mental health related homicides in the UK each year. Most of these are convicted by reason of diminished responsibility and are sent to hospital rather than prison. We know that they're considered dangerous patients. They're considered what they call restricted patients. And we know that mental health tribunals on each year release around 500 restricted patients every year. And we know that 300 of them are recalled to hospitals quite quickly afterwards. And that's from the official statistics. And I did whole series of investigations into what happens to these patients, and I looked at inquiry reports after these incidents, and I found that around 30 of them who had committed very, very serious offences had gone on to kill. And in our experience, most people, although the courts often say people will never be released, as that's what happened in the Nottingham case, you know, if ever Vardy Kallikane will be released, in our experience, most people are released within 5 to 10 years. And they're released by tribunals, which are completely secret and open to no sort of oversight or public scrutiny whatsoever. We don't know the names of the judges. We don't know the names of the evidence they consider. We don't really know how they come to make their decisions. And we don't know if they're acting lawfully, because there's no transparency.
At these tribunals, Julian, are these people afforded legal representation? Do they have solicitors acting for them? How does it, or do you actually not know because of their secrecy?
They have legal representation paid for. They get legal aid. Victims' families are not considered interested parties, bizarrely. And we're not allowed to any representation. We're not allowed to attend. We're not allowed to know what's going on. And the whole system needs urgent reform to make it transparent and open. Maybe they are making proper decisions and these are people that slip through the net. But actually, at the moment, we know. And then this is an underestimate, because these are the only ones that I've been able to find out from inquiry reports, and the NHS has recently stopped publishing inquiry reports in full, so we can't tell. So this just needs an awful lot of openness and transparency to make. And there needs to be a balance. There needs to be a balance between patient confidentiality and the rights of the public to be protected.
And tragically, you're speaking from a position of personal involvement, I understand. Is that right?
Yeah, my father was killed by a mentally ill person in 2007, and I found that it was incredible. Although I'd been an investigative documentary maker for ITV and the BBC for more than 25 years, I found it incredibly difficult to get any information about who this person was, what their previous care and treatment was, and why the man was so unwell, psychotic and dangerous in the community when he killed my dad. I couldn't find out, and I had 25 years' experience as an investigative journalist. I found that, and I thought, if it's that difficult for me, what's it like for my mum or somebody like my mum? And that's why I founded the charity, because there needs a whole lot of openness and transparency. The public can be reassured that services are safe. I think judges are ill-informed about what happens afterwards when they sentence people to hospital orders. There needs to be a lot more scrutiny and transparency around these decisions, because we don't think that these decisions are safe.
And I've enjoyed speaking with you, and sadly it's for all the wrong reasons, but thank you very much for all your input. And obviously it is some years ago, 2007, but still my condolences. The situation in which you lost your father, Julian Hendy, founder and CEO of 100 Families. We might pick up on that conversation. Certainly you're still calling in about the idea of a customs union. Of course, there is the reports in some papers that this is because Wes Streeting has been talking about a rather cosier relationship with Europe. And is that a victim? Is this, of course, now Keir Starmer finds himself a victim of this warfare going on within the Labour Party? That's why he's moving his position. We'll look at that. And coming up after the news, we're going to be speaking to the boss of the TUC about... claiming after a study that there's work-related stress crisis. We should take stress out of the workplace. But how do they define stress in the workplace? 8:31, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrar, and LBC News Time, Dominic Ellis.
The government's under pressure from some of its own MPs to oppose US action to seize Venezuela's president. The Home Office Minister Mike Tapp has told Nick this morning the UK must wait for America's legal justification before commenting. Mobile phones and SIM cards can be seized from illegal migrants from today without needing to arrest them. It's hoped the new powers for Border Force officials will help tackle channel crossings. And hundreds of schools in northern Scotland are closed, where amber warnings for snow are in force. There's also less severe yellow alerts in place for much of the rest of the UK. LBC weather staying very cold but bright for most of the UK today. Some snow showers will continue for northern Scotland and the north of England, with a high of 7 degrees.
This is LBC. Listen on the move with the new LBC app.
Say yes to summer with the biggest ever TUI sale with a My TUI account. Say yes to flexible payment options. Say yes to free kids places, even in the school summer holidays. With so many holiday options to choose from, you pick it, we sort it.
holiday countdown started. TUI, Atoll and Apta protected. Booking T's and C's apply. Selected departures. Minimum spend apply. Subject to availability. See website for details.
Every investor has a future in mind, whether it's seeing your kids through uni or picturing yourself retiring in Tuscany. The hard part can be knowing how to get there. JP Morgan Personal Investing can help you see the path ahead. With our intuitive app, expert support, and 150 years of JP Morgan's investing experience, you can start making more informed investment decisions today. Search JP Morgan Personal Investing. Invest with clarity. Capital at risk.
At Pets in a Pickle, we know what it's like welcoming a new pet into the family. Whether it's a curious kitten or a wobbly-legged puppy, they're cute, they're chaos, and sometimes they get themselves into a pickle. That's why we offer fuss-free pet insurance policies with unlimited video call access with First Vet. So the only thing you have to worry about is keeping them away from your favourite vase. For pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
Nick Ferrari at Breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
8:34. Back to work for you today? You listen to this under the duvet thinking, oh, just have another 5 minutes. I've had a great, I don't know, 15, 18, 20 day, I don't know. But I've got to, and I appreciate many of you put in a shift over Christmas and New Year, and thank you. You've kept the, you've driven the ambulances, you've worked in our hospitals, you've kept the power stations going. I get it, I get it, I get it, and thank you very much. I hope you got some kind of break. But for a lot of us, it's back to work. Although, apparently for many of us, there's too much stress in the workplace. Unions calling for action to tackle workloads after a study suggested there's a work-related stress crisis. The TUC claiming employees were failing to bosses were failing to assess or act on the risks of stress their staff face. Now, they spoke with 2,700 safety reps, four out of five whom reported stress is one of the main concerns they face. All right. Let's get more from Paul Novak, General Secretary of the TUC. Let's start with a greeting. Happy New Year to you, Paul. Good to have you on.
Happy New Year to you, Nick.
And may it be a successful one to you. Define stress in the workplace, Paul.
Well, I think it's probably better that the Health and Safety Executive defines stress, Nick. So they describe stress as the adverse reaction people have to excessive pressures and demands at work. And it's important to remember that all employers in the public and private sector have a legal obligation to prevent stress at work. So I think what this survey shows is that actually for many people at work, the real risks to safety and health aren't, you know, the traditional things we associate with heavy lifting or chemicals. It's actually stress and workload pressures.
How does a boss work out if he or she is putting too much stress on their colleagues?
Well, this is a really crucial point because all employers have got an obligation to assess risk, Nick, and quite often what employers do is they assess the physical risks to staff, but they don't assess some of those risks around workload and stress and other pressures. So the simple thing to do is to carry out a workplace risk assessment and just think, are we asking staff to work in a reasonable way? Now, we'd encourage employers, and certainly where there are union safety reps in the workplace, to consult with those safety reps, but to consult with their staff as well, because this isn't rocket science, and I think it's something that every employer can and should do. Just carry out those basic risk assessments and make sure that they're treating people safely and fairly. And this is good for employers as well, Nick, because we lost 22 million working days last year to work-related stress. And that's something that's not good for employers. It's not, certainly not good for the staff affected.
How stressful is your post?
My post is pretty stressful at times. But one of the things that I have, and similar to yourself, I imagine, Nick, is I have agency over my work. There's nobody cracking the whip over me saying, Paul, you need to put in an extra 15 minutes unpaid this afternoon. I have agency, and there are lots of people who just aren't in that position. We've got over 1 million people, for example, on 0 hours contracts who don't know from 1 minute to the next how much they're going to be earning. That's the sort of additional pressure that staff face, and that's why the Government Employment Relations Act that got onto the statute book last year can't come soon enough, frankly, Nick.
Paul, if we look at an area that I know well, which is journalism or news reporting or radio production, your point about me being a presenter is a fair one. But for my colleagues who are involved as reporters or producers, how would you suggest work-related stress is surveyed with them?
Well, as I say, Nick, I think it's going to look different in different workplaces. But the key thing is, nobody's saying having a deadline that you've got to meet or an occasionally time-pressured piece of work, that's part and parcel of the job. But if people are constantly feeling at the end of the day they're burnt out, they're struggling to meet deadlines, that there isn't enough people in the team, then that's a problem. And the only way you're going to identify that is carrying out that risk assessment. So I say it's not rocket science. I mean, the other thing I think we need to see in workplaces more broadly is the health and safety executive being funded to actually properly assess risk. HSE has seen £46 million worth of cuts under the last government, and the number of workplace inspectors has gone down from over 1,600 to less than 1,000. I mean, frankly, an employer's got more chance of winning the lottery than they have of having the workplace inspected. So, you know, as I say, this is about balance, but in far too many workplaces, those risk assessments aren't happening and workers are under stress.
What do you want a government to take from this, Paul?
Well, as I say, I think, crucially, Nick, funding for the health and safety executive. Most employers try and do the right thing, but we know there are some employers that basically take the mickey and they need to know that they could be inspected. And the other thing is that Employment Relations Act, Employment Rights Act, which will be so crucial in terms of reducing things like 0 hours contracts, to get that onto from the statute book into workplaces as quickly as possible. I've made the argument all along: the Employment Rights Act is good for employees, but it's good for good bosses, and it's good for the UK economy as well.
Lastly, your point about retail is a fair one. I get it, but Paul, if I point you to areas such as the media, the city, advertising, chefs, restaurants, come on, you know it can't work there, Paul. You're a reasonable bloke.
But Nick, it
can't
can.
In a kitchen. It can't in a kitchen.
It can, because, as I say, there will always be pressures. The key is in that word, excessive pressures. And if you're asking people to constantly, day in, day out, deal with, for example, not enough staff to do the job, that is something that an employer can remedy. So, as I say, it's not going to be one size fits all in every workplace for every profession. But I bet that there are kitchens out there where staff feel properly supported, that employers take things like their shift pattern seriously, and I'd urge every employer to learn from the best.
Happy New Year. I'm sure we'll talk a lot through it. Thanks for your input, Paul Nowak, General Secretary of the TUC. I get it. I get it in areas such as retail, absolutely. But the world that I know, journalism, and I suppose radio production now, really, or the city, or advertising, or I've never worked in a professional kitchen. I worked in a bar, but it's not the same. To be shouted at by the chef isn't the same as working in the kitchen. But it can't work, can it? Giovanni, going to talk to you about customs union. I'm acutely aware that I've not read anything like enough of your emails, your texts, so let's put that right. We talked in the first hour tonight, this idea is, as of today, government officials will be seizing mobile phones from migrants or asylum seekers who arrive in this country. None of you are particularly impressed with this. Alan says, well done, government. So the bottom of the channel now to get passports and the latest phones. I'm on my way to trawl for them. Dan in Tunbridge is equally unimpressed. Give me a break. Most people ditch their phones before they get here. Pure gaslighting. And then on the idea, which we're going to explore now, of possibly getting back into some kind of trading operation, cooperation with the European Union. Abdul says, Keir is being foolish. He's now talking of a single market as the threat to his leadership becomes real. All along, he had the opportunity to do better. We do need the EU, not the terrorist bullying US. Shock that he doesn't understand this. Giovanna's in Kensington. Giovanna, what do you want to tell me? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. First-time caller.
Thank you.
Mine's Happy New Year. Mine was a response to the caller who claimed that Italians are unhappy about being in Europe.
Yes, and that was Tony, gentleman called Tony.
Firstly, Italians moan all the time. so that's not indicative of whether being part of the Europe is a good or not good thing. Secondly, unfortunately, Europe, or rather fortunately, has actually brought to light the difficulties and the ongoing corruptions there has been going on in our countries. And when things obviously have to be are exposed, Italians have suffered. The euros has caused a reduction in value of items that we buy. But that's not as a result of the euro. That's as a result of our own internal fiscal and economic policy and our own internal corruption. Italians benefit greatly from money that Europe gives us, such as the PNR. We have made great steps forward with European money, and without Europe, frankly, I think we would be absolutely broke.
What should the course of action for the United Kingdom be, Giovanna?
My view is that Brexit was the biggest mistake in the last century. So I think the first step should be to go back into the European Union. Perhaps the first step is go back into the single market.
And if you, again, to the experience or the points that Tony was making, can you tell me that most Italians are happy with the euro?
No, most Italians are unhappy with euros, but that's because of the rhetoric that has been sort of drummed into Italians. And the rhetoric is that Europe is at fault, but equally the politicians are not explaining how much Europe has been helping Italy. And it's just that are giving the Europe has been singled out as the problem for most countries where there are difficulties in government, which are not being honest with their citizens and are blaming Europe for a lot of things. I'm not saying Europe is perfect, but certainly on financial, economic grounds, and also for, I would say, defence grounds, I think Europe is a very, very useful, and we've seen it these days with the Trump policies. I think Europe is a very, very important safeguard against a lot of unpleasantries. Yes.
Giovanna, thank you for your input. Have a good year. Ulf is in Hamburg. Ulf, your view. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes.
Brexit was a dumb idea to begin with.
Okay.
And going back to the single market and the customs deal would make sense.
That's what we're talking about now. Customs. So I don't know that we really need to do the Brexit argument. It's going to be, 11, 12 years on now. I just wonder where you would be on the, or 10 years on, where you would be on the idea of either a customs union or a single market. That's what the sort of the new development is.
Yeah, good idea. You have to align with somebody. The United States are not a viable option anymore. And anyway, we are your biggest, closest trading partner. So reducing any obstacle for trade between us and you makes sense. There is always a trade-off, but as you do less trade with the rest or with other places, the advantages will outweigh the disadvantages by several factors. So I don't really, there is no economic argument against it. You will just have to swallow your pride.
Okay. Again, we're not going to, if that's all right, we're not going to do the Brexit argument, because what's made it so important, or so relevant, I should say, is the fact that the British Prime Minister has talked about a single market or a customs union, because he has. But you see either one. You see either one as being beneficial.
Yeah, sure. I mean, and it's his only prayer of winning the next election, of actually remaining prime minister until that point. Yeah, of course, it's advantageous for you to do so if we take you back.
All right.
And because...
Well, no, you're going back again to this idea, and I don't know that many people have got the strength to do the whole Brexit argument again, but the idea of that's what makes it, whether it is a single market, whether it is a customs union, and that, because many people would say the fight he's having with Wes Streeting is what's taken us there. Ulf, thank you for your view. Auf Wiederhören, as they say in Hamburg. 8:46 LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
The government's under pressure from some of its own MPs to oppose US action to seize Venezuela's president. Mobile phones and SIM cards can be seized from illegal migrants from today without needing to arrest them. And hundreds of schools in northern Scotland are closed where amber warnings for snow are in force. LBC weather staying very cold for most of the UK. Snow showers continuing for northern Scotland and northern England. A high of 7 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays on the A1M southbound to Junction 7 at Stevenage South, and that's where a lorry's broken down. Just north of Marble Arch, the A5 Edgware Road remains closed both ways because of the ongoing investigation. Lots of problems on the underground this morning. The District Line can't run between Turnham Green and Richmond, which also means the Mildmay Line is suspended between Richmond and Wilsdon Junction. The Jubilee Line is suspended between Stratford and Canary Wharf, and there are severe delays on the Victoria Line and also minor delays on the Circle and Bakerloo lines. Now, southeastern trains remain disrupted. They're delayed at Petswood because of a signal failure, and there are still some delays as well going to and from Charing Cross.
This is LBC.
Turn ordinary into the extraordinary every day with the Lexus LBX. Whilst most SUVs are big and brash, the LBX is quietly bold and confident. Refined luxury crafted into a compact SUV. The Lexus LBX. What car's best small SUV 2024 and 2025?
Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
Right then, who's all in for Cancer Research UK's Race for Life? Anglers, ramblers, climbers, five-a-siders, surfers, gamers, bikers, hang gliders!
Book clubbers.
Are we up for it? Let's go all in against cancer, all in to help fund life-saving research. Sign up now and save 30% off entry to your local 3K, 5K, 10K or Pretty Muddy event. Search Race for Life. Discount ends January 31st, 2026. T's and C's apply.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
New year, new you. Maybe. New year, new car. Definitely. Upgrade your year with a new Vauxhall Fonterra Electric or any car from our award-winning range. With 0% APR over 4 years with a minimum 20% deposit and £1,000 off on top of all other offers. That's a resolution worth sticking to. Search Vauxhall today. £1,000 saving on new car orders until the January 2026. Personal contract purchase, 20% deposit, 18 plus. Subject to status and availability. T's and C's, Stellantis Financial Services.
Quick question. Well, actually three, but they are quick. One, do you have a car? Two, are you looking to save on your car insurance? And three, do you have a Tesco club card? Well, if you do, you could get exclusive club card prices when you take out or renew a policy with Tesco car insurance. And with three levels of cover available, you can choose the one that's right for you. Over a million club card members are already saving money. So just search online for Tesco car insurance.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973.
10 minutes before nine. Let's talk about stress. Mary, coming to your call in just a moment. Now, the TUC is arguing that we should have more counsellors and health and safety reps should be more acutely attuned to issues of stress. And having spoken with the leader of the TUC, I get it. I get it in areas such as retail. But in a job such as the one that I've known from my entire working life, which is journalism, I've only ever known stress. It's all I have ever known. I couldn't cope without it. I mean, you want to know stress. You want to know stress? When you're running the news output for Fox in New York, and you're running, and everybody accepts you're going to be fourth, right? So it goes, in my day, NBC, 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 ABC, NBC, CBS, then it was Fox. And suddenly you're told that what was called WPIX or WPIX, Channel 11, is overtaking on the news output. And you're told that Mr. Murdoch's flying into town, and you've just got the latest viewing figures. You want to know stress? That is stress. Or prior to that, you are what's laughingly known as the showbiz reporter on the Sun newspaper, and you discover that someone on the Daily Mirror has got an exclusive about the band Police breaking up, and you haven't got a sniff of it, and the editor's just picked up. You want to know stress? That, my friends, is stress. And I'm going to tell you, although it's pretty shocking at the time, is actually you need some stress in the workplace. Some stress, I hasten to add. I get what the guy from the TUC said, totally. If you have no agency, if you have no control over it, then that is a problem. But in so many industries, advertising, the city, for God's sake. Mario's in Luton. Mario, your view on this. What do you want to say? Good morning. You're on the radio.
Good morning. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Mario. Nice.
Coming from Eastern Europe, personally, I think in UK, we're playing too much with the feelings, you know, and emotions, and especially in workplace, because, like, as I mentioned, my missus been working in a warehouse. So she basically moved up to a different position, and the manager was begging her to come back because they hired three people to do the same job, and they did not do it. Literally, I don't know how.
So your your wife is also Eastern European, is she?
Can I ask
which country you're from? You don't have to tell.
Lithuania.
Lithuania. So talk to me about what we call the work ethic, the idea of work in Lithuania. Tell me how important it is. How is it drilled into you?
Well, you need to do the job. When you come sign up, you know, for interview, saying I'm able to do competent do the job, you need to do it. And if you lie, you know that you are able, but you do not want, so you just, you know, literally cannot. You're breaking the contract with the employer because you said you are able and you agree with the conditions. You obviously it may take some time to find out what's happening in the workplace, but in most cases, like even at my work, you know, we got people saying, oh, yes, I'll do it. And it takes 3 days to do the job. But I need sometimes to cover the cost because I employ the guy to do the job. So, yes, it's I just think we just need to do the work. And I think it also sometimes is very convenient for people working in public sector because many places you cannot be fired easily. And, you know, so you can just. Again, my missus' situation, she got some colleagues who literally calling sick every second day, and guess who needs to cover the load? She needs to cover.
She covers the load, yeah. How often are surveys done into stress in the workplace in Lithuania?
To be honest, I don't know if they even done. You know, when you're advertising for the job, the benefits, they're saying salary paid on time. that's one of the benefits for you working, doing the job. So, as I said, you know, growing from small age, you know, you want something, you work for it, you get it. And then just don't expect someone else to take your load, you know, and do it for you. That's the general attitude.
Lastly, how does the average British worker compare with the average worker in Lithuania, would you say, Mario?
I don't think it's easy, you know, to compare, you know, like everywhere you got bad apples, but in general I would say it's people who want to work, they do work, and then it does not really matter Lithuanian or British, you know, but in my point of view, you know, you always will get people who just don't want to do the job, they're just happy to ride on someone else's back and then just get paid for it.
And that's sadly what might be going on. Mario, thank you for your input on that. Colin Ball says, with respect, Nick, that's not stress. Stress is worrying how to pay your bills month to month. We need some perspective. Tom says, have you ever had people die on your shift routinely? You want to know stress. That's stress. That's horrific. I assume you're in the medical world. Steffi says, we were put on this earth to live, not constantly fight for survival. Well, I don't know about that, Steffi. If you go back many, 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 many millennia, we were all running away from dinosaurs, weren't we, in constant fear of being eaten by Tyrannosaurus or Brontosaurus, whatever it might be. So I think, I don't know, we always just put here to live. I think there's always been a degree of stress there. But we're also talking about the stress in which the Prime Minister finds himself. Customs Union, single market, what should be the relationship with the European Union after Wes Streeting, who seems to go from strength to strength, doesn't he, in his ambitions to possibly be the leader of the party. Indeed, the Prime Minister had a particularly good Christmas and New Year period by letting out his position on this. 5 minutes before nine, let's get Chandra in Newcastle in on that one. Chandra, what do you want to say? Good morning.
Very good morning, Nick. Happy New Year.
And to you.
May 2026 be a good one for you
for
and your family.
Indeed, for you as well, sir. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you. Given that 48 hours ago, Donald Trump kidnapped the leader of... He might be a dictator. Maduro is a dictator, and he's a brutal leader. Mm. But what happened is kidnapping, effectively kidnapping, on foreign soil. We can't trust United States, and we can't. It's difficult to see how we can have trade with faraway countries in the very uncertain circumstances. Even today, even in 2025, at the end of 2025, our imports from Europe are in excess of 50%. Goods and services imports are in excess of 50% of our total imports. And our exports to Europe are still in excess of 40% of our total trade. So we are, whether we like or not, we are economically heavily linked to European Union.
Yes.
Now, it's incumbent upon us mm-hmm. to to have conversations which are favorable to us. Not necessarily we don't have to jump. We don't have to enter into negotiations which are to our detriment. But this current situation is not really helping. We need. I mean, there are sectors obviously where.
But Chandra, explain this. Why do you imagine the GDP of the whole European Union is so flat?
I mean, there is such a thing called Russia happening.
Russia's affected the whole world. My argument is that the United Kingdom had a unique opportunity to explore other deals with Brexit, which the people who were put in by Boris Johnson, most of whom struggled to run a bath, let alone run negotiations, and that's where it went wrong.
That's true, Nick. But the point is, I've just given you figures. They have not made up these numbers. This is from a report submitted to UK Parliament a few weeks ago. This is on overall trade picture with European Union. 50% of our imports in 2024 as well as in 2025 are still from European Union. Mm-hmm. Now, European Union, regardless of how their GDP growth is, the fact is we still trade with them. We are still heavily trading with them.
So the argument is, therefore, do we look at a customs union or a single market? Which do you think offers better opportunities?
I would say single market because single market gives us... No, sorry. Customs union because yes. It gives us a better control in sectors where our businesses, especially in the fisheries, are not adversely affected. So let's have customs union and so that we can get rid of some of these additional expenses when we sell into Europe and when we buy... The ridiculous prices our businesses have to pay, which we didn't have to when we were part of the European Union. Right. So I would say we can't walk away from this.
Okay, so we must walk away from that particular conversation because the music means we will move on. And in a sense, we move on by going backwards for 48 hours and that audacious activity by the United States in Venezuela, explained by President Trump.
We are going to run the country until such time as we can do a safe, proper, and judicious transition. We want peace, liberty, and justice for the great people of Venezuela.
Plus, the figures are finally in. That decision as regards school fees mean that more than 100 private schools have been forced to close. I'll give you details on that. Plus...
Long story short, after the most grueling 3-4 months, the girls have now been diagnosed with a severe muscle disease called SMA type 1.
That heartbreaking post from former Little Mix star Jesse Nelson. News on LBC is next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, the government is under pressure from some of its own MPs to oppose US action to capture Venezuela's president. American Special Forces seized Nicolas Maduro in Caracas on Saturday on drugs and weapons charges. A number of countries, including China, have criticised the operation, saying it violates international law. But speaking to Nick, the Home Office Minister Mike Tapp says the UK must wait for America's legal justification before commenting further.
We're always under pressure in the modern age to make comments quickly. It's only been
48 hours.
I'd say it's only been 48 hours, and I think that's a demonstration of the modern age.
Well, if you're a military bloke, you know, 48 hours is a long time. You'll win or lose a war in 48 hours.
It is a short period of time, particularly with these sort of complex operations. Let's wait for the United States to lay out its legal basis. That's what needs to happen.
Swiss authorities say they've now identified all 40 people killed in a fire at a ski resort bar on New Year's Day. They include 15-year-old Charlotte Nidham, a former pupil at schools in London and Hertfordshire. Hundreds of schools in Scotland have been shut because of heavy snow. Amber weather warnings are in place for northern areas of the country. Drifting snow and ice over the weekend has closed several roads. Alan Waddle is an Assistant Chief Constable at Police Scotland.
Our advice is to plan ahead and consider if your journey is really necessary during the weather warnings. We continue to work with partners to help our communities impacted by the adverse weather. If you need to travel, please drive to the conditions. Be prepared for delays and allow extra time for your journey.
Yellow weather warnings for snow and ice are also in place for much of the rest of the UK. Mobile phones and SIM cards can be seized from illegal migrants from today without needing to arrest them. It's hoped the new powers for Border Force officials will help tackle channel crossings and smuggling gangs. And tougher rules on unhealthy food being advertised on TV and online have now come into force this morning. It's part of the government plan to tackle child obesity. Adverts featuring foods high in fat, salt and sugar can't be shown on television before 9pm. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 30 at 99.80. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.14. LBC weather staying very cold but bright for most of the UK today. Snow showers for northern Scotland and the north of England. A high of 7 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Wellness. What even is wellness? Cleanses, routines, regimes, biohacks, stacks, schedules, procedures, programs. I suppose so. But can it just be a cup of... Pucker Herbal Tea. Ah, pucker. Nothing beats nature.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Morning, 3 minutes after nine on Monday, January the 5th. We'll come back to arguably the biggest story globally, which is the US action in Venezuela. And of course, events that will play out across the United States, New York and other parts of the United States through the course of today, and get your reactions on that. Back here in the UK, speaking with you in June of last year, then Shadow Schools Minister Catherine McKinnell didn't seem to really have the narrative clear over how many students would leave private education due to the then opposition, now the government's policy concerning VAT.
A lack of cooperation within areas on school places and making sure that we have all the right places in all the right places, in all the right number of places, in all the right geographical places.
Well, that makes perfect sense then. And this heartbreaking post from former Little Mix singer and star Jessie Nelson.
They're probably never going to be able to walk. They probably will never regain their neck strength, so they will be disabled.
As I said, heartbreaking, isn't it? Talking about a condition, spinal muscular atrophy type 1. Be talking to you if you had similar diagnosis or diagnoses for your child or your children and coping with that level of disability.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
That's where we move on. A number of you are getting very excited about an earlier conversation which I talked about. I think it was dinosaurs chasing human beings, and Adam and Graham and Steph and various others saying that never happened. I'm 65 million years out. Have none of you seen Raquel Welsh? Can we not just leave it there? And if you haven't, I suggest you do see the movie with Raquel Welsh. That was in a conversation about stress, so let's move on to other matters. And there's no shortage of stress globally at the moment with the downfall of Nicolas Maduro. As I said at the start of the show in the first hour, don't shed any tears for him. The key now, the key is, for our conversation, what happens next. Just give you some of the background. Inflation last year is likely to come in at 270% in Venezuela. In the last 10 years, living standards have contracted by 74%. In the election, that's got quotes around it, in 2024... when it was about halfway through, and the opponent, Maduro's opponent, Edmundo González, had 80% of the vote halfway through. Stay with me, 50% in, 80% ahead. They decided to suspend the vote. They faked the figures. They stole the actual ballot sheets. And they imprisoned countless people, some of whom have never been seen again. Also, the drug trade, which he stands accused of, 74,100 Americans who lost their lives to drug overdoses, some of which is drug supplied, it is believed, from Venezuela. So there's some numbers for you. So is the world a better place that he's facing trial? Yeah, undoubtedly. Now, the key being what happens next, as I said in the first hour. Okay? Because if you look at history, unfortunately, you look at past American activities, such as Vietnam, Afghanistan, Iraq,
not exactly spectacular, is it? Not littered with success. But then, if you go a long way back and you look at post-war Japan, or you look at Panama, which has now got the strongest economy in the whole of Latin America, following, of course, American action all those years ago by a former President Bush. No, not that one, the other one. So the key is, what happens next? But does this man have the ability to make it work?
Late last night and early today, at my direction, the United States Armed Forces conducted an extraordinary military operation in the capital of Venezuela. Overwhelming American military power, air, land, and sea, was used to launch a spectacular assault. And it was an assault like people have not seen since World War II. Maduro and Flores have been indicted in the Southern District of New York. It's Jay Clayton, for their campaign of deadly narco-terrorism against the United States and its citizens. So we are going to run the country until such time as we can do a safe, proper, and judicious transition.
What should the United Kingdom's response be? Well, speaking with the BBC yesterday, an unsurprisingly, loyally reaction from Sir Keir.
But we need to establish a full picture. I then need to speak to President Trump. I need to speak to our allies. Mm-hmm. But I don't shy away from this. I've been a lifelong advocate of international law and the importance of compliance with international law. But I want to ensure that I've got all the facts at my disposal. Mm-hmm. And we haven't got that at the moment.
Well, if you're a lifelong advocate of international law, this surely has to be a breach, doesn't it? Well, that's something I explored in the first hour of the show. They've had nearly another 24 hours, of course, the government, to work out where they stand with this. And on the round is Migration Minister, Minister of Migration and Citizenship, Mike Tapp.
Well, firstly, it's not a bad thing that this dictator is no longer in charge in Venezuela. You know, he kidnapped dissidents, he tortured people, he used sexual violence. So for him to not be there is positive for the people of Venezuela. What's important now is that we see a safe, peaceful, democratic transition for the people of Venezuela. And we've made it clear, the Prime Minister's made it clear, that international rules and legality is always at the heart of what we do as a country.
But surely President Trump has breached international law, hasn't he, Minister?
Well, we're still waiting to see that legal basis laid out by the United States for its operation.
What do you need to know?
Look, this is the complexity of an operation, having been involved in many in the past. That,
Dictators have you kidnapped?
That's a good question. None, Nick. None.
Right. So we know the who, what, where, when, why, how. I mean, so what is there to determine?
To clarify, Nick, I'm talking about my military experience. There's often many complexities to that. So we do need the United States to lay out the legal basis for its operation.
So you can see, lastly, Minister, you can see a route by which this does adhere to international law.
Well, this is really difficult to say at this point, which is why we need to see the United States lay out that legal basis. We've got to keep talking to our allies and talk to the United States. But the Prime Minister's been really clear that international law and legality is at the very foundation.
Okay, lastly, Mr. Tapp, what could possibly be the circumstances that this was legally justified?
And I don't want to try and preempt what the United States might come with for their legal basis. It's for them to do, not for me.
But US military personnel went into another country to abduct its leader. That has to be a breach of international... Nick, I'm not saying I'm against it, by the way, but it has to be a breach.
We're always under pressure in the modern age to make comments quickly. It's only been
48 hours.
It's only been 48 hours, and I think that's a demonstration of the modern age.
Well, if you're a military bloke, you know, 48 hours is a long time. You can win or lose a war in 48 hours.
It is a short period of time, particularly with these sort of complex operations. Let's wait for the United States to lay out its legal basis. That's what needs to happen.
And how did you react in the first hour? Well, here's starting with Rob in Weybridge.
I'm absolutely furious about this. Not just with what Trump has done, but also our government's response.
I was watching Sir Trevor Phillips yesterday, had Darren Jones on. He could not have not answered a question better. I mean, he was asked 50 different times in different ways, and all he kept on saying is it's not for us as a British government. Well, it is when it's Russia, when it's other countries, when it's China.
John in Enfield.
If Starmer decides to look at international law, whether he's adhered to international law, he's going to have to condemn Trump. That's the first thing. Before Trump came into power, the US saw the biggest mass migration from Venezuela. And I remember the people at the time that wanted to go into America, they were saying they just couldn't live there because of the gangs. Whether what's happened is good or bad, something had to be done there.
Khalid in Leicester.
I think we should rip up the international law book. Rip it up, because, I mean, look, there's immunity for some countries and condemnation when other countries break international law. This hypocrisy and arrogance is absolutely appalling. I mean, I've been to Venezuela myself many years ago now, but still, the situation then is just the same as it is today. There's no change.
And let's pick up on your reaction now, going to you in the order in which you've been holding, and there are many of you. James in High Wycombe. James, you're on the radio. Hello.
Hi, Nick. How are you?
Good to have you on, sir. What's your view of Trump's action? Thank you. And to you, of course, your view of Trump's action.
I mean, it's unprecedented, isn't it? And it made me chuckle because he called it an extraordinary military operation, not a special one. So there was truth in asking about it. Look, at the end of the day, as you've rightfully said, I'm not going to cry any tears over a dictator. Mm. It does. Keir Starmer's reaction is the thing that fascinates me. I actually don't think it was robust enough, because we are now living in a multipolar world. That's undeniable. And the people who are not democratic, which we should remind your listeners is most of the world, probably regard the international law system as a Western thing.
Right.
So it's quite funny when you if you take society, our country, and remove all the policemen, all the magistrates, and all the mechanisms of law, that's international relations. Now, if the criminals are running around robbing your car and burgling your house, and you're saying, "I won't do anything naughty because there's law, but there's no policemen and there's no government and there's no system," then you're insane. And that's international relations is by its nature anarchic. It's an anarchic system. Countries can kind of do what they want unless someone's more powerful than them. And that's why nuclear weapons are such a massive issue, because, of course, it's the mechanism to stop people. So I completely understand Trump's mechanism.
So the idea of a rule.
Acknowledging the world has changed, Nick, and we haven't. We're about to give away this week a very, very strategic island chain and pay for the privilege of it. And Keir Starmer is a barrister
into
something that is not international law. These are standards. Let's be clear, they're best practice. And we wrote them so that other people would follow our line and hopefully become democracies. But they haven't, Nick.
You don't believe in what's called rules-based order whatsoever, James?
The rules-based order only works if the hegemony, which is America, enforces it. Now, Trump has clearly stated and has done very, very transparently for years, why should I do this when the EU don't pay for the military kit? You know, I'm in debt now, et cetera, et cetera. He's laid out his motives. I don't agree or disagree with him, but he's laid them out pretty transparently. And China and Russia are very, very clear about their motives. India are always silent and a superpower in the making. So the UK simply has to acknowledge that the world is anarchic and we are not presently in any vector. And I think all your listeners would agree, we don't even have an idea of what our national interests are. I'm not even sure Keir Starmer does. He certainly never announced them to anyone else. I think diversity is the only one that we seem to have as a national interest, which is dubious at best, if you ask me.
Finally, what would be a mature reaction then from Sir Keir Starmer on behalf of the British government?
I think I would have been very robust and used it as political leverage to add 1% to the defence budget immediately, to convene an alliance conversation with global middle powers like Japan, Brazil, Canada, and use it to get power, Nick. Because life and international relations is only about power. And that either comes through money or muscle. And sadly, four or five very, very sizable entities, the EU, America, Russia and China, understand this. And we, the Brits, sort of trail in their wake, going, the law, the law. Everyone's laughing at us.
James, thank you for your rationale. I have to finish here to get to the news. Let's just feature some of the messages that are coming in briefly, just a couple here. This comes in from Paul. You have to see this Venezuelan act as an act of colonialism. What Venezuela were doing was selling their oil not via the dollar but other currencies of national countries. Same subject. This comes in from John. I'm so sorry, from Michael. It would be great if Delta Force could bring out the Ayatollahs. Even Starmer then would have to focus and have a focus group before he could support it. Okay, keep them coming on there. Judith, you're going to be calling on that, as is Ali as well. Also coming up after news, learning the lesson over the addition of VAT on those school fees? We'll pick up on that. 9:16 LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
Sir Keir Starmer's under pressure from some of his own MPs to oppose US action to capture Venezuela's president. Hundreds of schools in Scotland have been closed because of heavy snow. And mobile phones can be seized from illegal migrants from today without needing to arrest them. LBC weather staying very cold but bright for most of the UK. Snow showers for northern Scotland and northern England. A high of 7 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Delays on the M25 clockwise up to Junction 6 at Godstone. It's because a car has broken down. Also delays around Marble Arch with the Edgware Road, the A5 being closed in both directions because of an ongoing police investigation. There are so many problems on the underground this morning. The Jubilee line is suspended between Stratford and Lunsdon Bridge. But then there are delays for the Bakerloo, Central, Circle, Hammersmith and City, Metropolitan and Victoria lines. And also the Mildmay line remains part suspended. There's no trains running between Richmond and South Acton. Also on the train, southeastern services can't stop at Petswood following a signal failure.
This is LBC.
Every investor has a future in mind, whether it's seeing your kids through uni or picturing yourself retiring in Tuscany. The hard part can be knowing how to get there. JP Morgan Personal Investing can help you see the path ahead. With our intuitive app, expert support, and 150 years of JP Morgan's investing experience, you can start making more informed investment decisions today. Search JP Morgan Personal Investing. Invest with clarity. Capital at risk.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
I love visiting Mum and Dad, but as they've gotten older, I've worried about leaving them on their own, especially in winter. We visit as often as we can, but they needed more regular help. That's why we're so grateful to Ellie, their home instead care professional, who lives with them and is always there when she's needed. It means Mum and Dad can stay in the home they love, and it gives us peace of mind to know they're okay when we're not there. For award-winning home care you can trust, visit homeinstead.co.uk.
Simone combined her old pensions with PensionBee.
So I had multiple pensions from various jobs that I have been in, and every 6 months or so I would receive a statement, and I was losing track of all my different pensions and all the different statements. I just wanted one easy way of keeping them all in one place.
At PensionBee, we believe that when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. Download the app or go to PensionBee.com and be pension confident. When investing, your capital is at risk.
The congestion charge helps to reduce traffic in central London. To ensure it remains effective while incentivising the switch to electric vehicles, electric cars will now be charged a 25% discounted rate of £13.50 rather than the new daily charge of £18. To receive the discount, electric cars must be registered on AutoPay. Further discounts are available for other electric vehicles. Search TfL AutoPay. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Ali, you're going to be the next caller. Then Judith, we're keeping you in line as to how long you've been holding. Let's just do a couple more of these texts and emails quickly. Kevin in Stirling. I'm no fan of Trump, however. His actions in Venezuela look an awful like smashing of criminal gangs. I like it. I wish the detail wasn't immediately dubious. Trump wasn't in power. That our government takes note that a softly, softly approach may not be the most expedient route to reduce influence of foreign criminality in the UK. Same subject. This comes in from Gordon. So we find the US has broken international law. What are we going to do, invade America? The last time we did that, it didn't turn particularly well, did it? Ali in Slough, what do you make of what happened on the weekend? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Hello, mate. Quick points. Past presidents and prime ministers shed light on this. I think it was Palmerston and Washington who said, we have no eternal allies and no perpetual enemies.
Right.
Our interests are what are eternal and perpetual, and those we must protect. So what Trump has done is what America and Britain have done historically is neoliberal colonialism. Even in Dickensian England, when the sun never set on the empire, poverty was ridiculous. Look at America. America, this is done, second point, for the purpose of Halliburton, JPR, the Kellogg Group brand, and all of these big American banks and corporations who will make billions. Mm-hmm. And thirdly, listening to the pussycat known as Keir Starmer was comical, if it wasn't so tragic. It's just, we are basically a poodle of America.
What did you want to hear from our Prime Minister yesterday?
I expected him to say that, but he's got no spine. Like, former Prime Minister, he's not alone. Thatcher famously was portrayed in spitting image. Remember the sketch when she was the Reagan's poodle? Britain toes the American line. Well, look it up.
I'm sure you're right. I just don't recall it. Yeah, go on. I remember the sketch with her in a cabinet all being the vegetables, but I don't remember that one. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
It's Reagan, and basically she's portrayed as a dog. So the point being is that Britain, like Emmanuel Macron, would toe the line because we want to share the spoils. Just like there was a race for Africa at the end of the 19th century, we're not going to rock the boat because we need the money and the influence.
What does Sir Keir do about what would appear to be a rebellion within his own ranks? Some Labour MPs who are supporters of Venezuela.
Look, Nick, after what happened in Gaza and international law, this is complete nonsense. The Labour Party is riddled with inconsistencies, as are the Tory Party. They're all two sides of the same counterfeit coin. They mug people off, sincere people in this country who see what's going on. America is a danger to the world, not just to Americans alone. This destabilizing effort is going to cause all of us harm.
But Maduro was a danger to the world, wasn't he?
Well, so are the despots who support in the Middle East, of the Zionist variety, or the Arab variety.
Yeah, but then, obviously, he was...
Well, stand on principle, Nick.
He was a close ally of China, and I don't know that we're necessarily huge fans of currently of the Chinese regime and Russia, and I would say the same. Surely anything that weakens China and Russia has to be a good thing?
No, not at all. You have to have a principled position. If you've got no principled position, you pick and choose. It's called hypocrisy. And that's where the problem is. If you want to get rid of dictators and have representative governments, why did you support Sisi in Egypt overthrowing what was the largest mandate Egypt ever had with Mohamed al-Mursi, for example? Why do you support dictatorships in Tunisia, the current clown that's in charge? This is realpolitik and neoliberal colonialism. International has been a shroud for that for the best part of 100 years anyway.
Ali, good speaking with you. Thank you, Judith. You'll be the next caller on that. But let's go to other matters, because we must reflect there are other stories around, and this is one that has been bouncing around since the government was in opposition, which was, of course, their idea, their decision to levy VAT on school fees. And you may recall, and I know some of you are furious and absolutely outraged that I carried on with this, but I challenged a series of politicians, while in opposition and then in government, about this policy and the impact it would have on that sector. What is the number of pupils in private education in this country?
So I know that it's 93% or just over sort of 93% of the school population. Again, I don't have that exact figure to hand right now.
I would just say to independent schools, you have hiked your fees up with inflation-busting increases year after year after year since 2010, and now you're pleading poverty. If you're worried about whether children in your schools will continue to access your schools, you'll have to cut your cloth in the way that state schools have had to do.
Are you aware how many private school students have applied to join state schools between June and September?
I've seen various reports in the press, but what I'm also aware of is that during that general election campaign, there was organised activity to encourage parents to register for places that they had no intention of taking up.
What is the true figure?
So I don't recognise the figure that is being
out
there.
So
the
you
press.
Don't recognise 3,000, I hear that, but you're Secretary of State for Education, so you'll have the figure. So what is the true figure?
So what we haven't seen is the movement that others had anticipated or had speculated might happen.
Now, later in that conversation, then Shadow Schools Minister Catherine McKinnell, now Health Secretary Wes Streeting, and now Education Secretary Bridget Phillipson. And if we played you more of those clips, you would hear that they reckoned there would be around 100 schools that would close, private schools that would close, after the imposition of VAT in the lifetime of this government. And we now learn research shows that 105 private schools closed last year. Let's turn to Sarah Cunnan, who's spokesperson for the Independent Schools Council, joining me now. Thank you for coming on. So we have a rough idea of the number of schools. Do we have any idea of the number of pupils we're talking about, broadly? Morning to you.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on. We don't know the number of pupils that have been directly affected by the number of school closures. What we do know is that in schools that have remained open, we've already seen a 25,000 pupil exodus from the system since VAT was announced on Labour coming to power in July 2020.
And of course, we've just passed the first anniversary of the imposition, because that came in as of January the 1st last year, so we're a year and 5 days or whatever it might be. Do you imagine, if I may call you Sarah, do you imagine it's going to get worse, or it's sort of bottomed out now? What's your take on that?
What we found in previous challenges for the sector, such as Brexit and COVID, is that there is an initial drop-off, but the real issue comes around 2-3 years in. We know that many parents will be doing all they can to take their children through to the end of a stage or a phase or exam years, and it will be after that that they'll really think about what they do next for their children. So when we talked about the drop-off in pupil numbers, when we talked about school closures, we were talking about the lifetime of this parliament, so 5 years. And when people say that, you know, they haven't seen the drop off that we predicted, we say, of course not. As you quite rightly pointed out, Nick, we're only a year into the policy. But what we have seen is that the drop off in pupil numbers and the amount of schools that have closed is much worse than the government has predicted already.
You probably saw the report in one of the newspapers yesterday. They're talking about 25, possibly around 25,000 children, 25,000 pupils. I mean, what's the impact going to be on the on the whole education sector if those figures turn out to be right, Sarah?
Yeah, I think that the state sector is still underfunded. And one of our warnings about VAT was that it would cause real lasting damage to some sectors within independent education without having a tangible benefit to the state. And I think that if you ask head teachers around the country now, they certainly aren't seeing the benefit of this VAT. They're facing further budget cuts after 15 years of being underfunded. And at the same time, independent education has less money. So it really is a less well-funded education system as a whole, because it is an ecosystem, than we've had previously.
Lastly, and I know this is a huge generalisation, but can you give us an idea of the health of the independent school sector at this time?
Yes, of course. I mean, there will always be places within the independent sector that will thrive, and there are those that are surviving and thriving, but there are those that are in real trouble. There are a number of reasons why independent schools fail, but for many, VAT has just been a bridge too far. But we know that many schools are continuing their work with bursaries. They are continuing their work to champion education within their local communities. And I know that all head teachers from whatever sector will want to continue that work.
Grateful for your time. Thank you, Sarah. Sarah Cunane, spokesperson for the Independent Schools Council. If that affects you, remember, and how many times did I say that in the run-up to the election, not every private school is like Eton or Charterhouse or wherever it might be. There are, there were so many. There's 105 fewer now up and down the country where parents forego newer cars or foreign holidays or extensions on the house or whatever it might be, or moving house, just so they can put their child through. We'll come back to that. Judith, you will be the first call. I hope you can hold. I want the perspective, not least as you are of Cuban heritage, your perspective on events in Venezuela. And we're also getting into this very upsetting conversation. Here's former Little Mix star Jessie Nelson with this post on social media yesterday concerning her children.
Long story short, after the most grueling 3-4 months, the girls have now been diagnosed with a severe muscle disease called SMA type 1.
Which really is devastating, and we'll be facing up to disabilities such as those in your children or child. And talking about that after this. It's 9:30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, on LBC News. Time, Dominic Ellis.
The government's under pressure from some of its own MPs to oppose US action to seize Venezuela's president. The Home Office Minister Mike Tapps told Nick the UK must wait for America's legal justification before commenting further. Hundreds of schools in northern Scotland are closed, where amber warnings for snow are in force. There's also less severe yellow alerts in place for much of the rest of the UK. And mobile phones can be seized from illegal migrants from today without needing to arrest them. It's hoped the new powers for Border Force officials will help tackle channel crossings. LBC weather staying very cold but bright for most. Snow showers for northern Scotland and northern England, a high of 7 degrees.
LBC.
With over 50 years' experience at Fidelity, we believe there's a difference between investing and being invested. Investing is having access to guidance, tools and expert insights. Being invested means feeling confident about your future.
Investing is choosing from a wealth of investment options. Being invested means focusing on your long-term goals. For ISAs, pensions or advice, be truly invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Terms apply.
Hiya, Kenny the hamster here, beloved pet of Doug and Carol Brookbank. Right, now, I've got to hand it to Doug and Kazza. They're doing school pickups, jobs, trips to the supermarket, and still find time to get healthy. Apparently, it's down to some NHS Healthy Choices quiz. Only took them 5 minutes to do, then gave them a simple plan to get started.
Come on, kids.
Total amazeballs.
Take your first little step to healthy. Search NHS Healthy Choices Quiz to get a score and a plan that's right for you.
If you have an M&S online account or a Sparks card, your data may have been exposed in a recent cyber attack. Earlier this year, M&S confirmed a data breach affecting customer information, including personal data. If you've ever shopped online at M&S or used Sparks, you could be entitled to compensation through a group action claim. Check your eligibility today at jointheclaim.com. It's quick, secure, and easy to do online at jointheclaim.com.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Lots of calls coming in about Venezuela and school fees, but Judith in Camden's been hanging on the line. We're going to come back to our Venezuelan conversation because I understand you are of Cuban heritage. Is that right, Judith? Hello.
Hello, good morning, Nick.
Thank you for holding on the line. What are you going to tell me, Judith?
This is my first time call, actually.
How lovely to have you on.
Yes, oh, I've been listening to LBC for years and years and years and dreaming.
And dreaming. Oh,
that
my
in
goodness.
In my country, such a wonderful debate.
Yes, indeed.
Would be allowed.
I know, I love your country. I went there a couple of years ago.
I feel very emotional about this subject.
Yes.
I'm feeling joy. I've got so many things to say, Nick. But first of all, I would like to say that I'm not a Trump fan at all. Yes? But today, I feel grateful. I want to thank Trump, his administration. I want to thank Marco Rubio for taking a tyrant.
Why are you so happy, Judith?
I'm very happy because in Venezuela, there wasn't a leader in power. He was a narco tyrant, a dictator, an assassin, a repressor. Yes, he was trained in Havana by the Cuban regime. He was trained there. He was put in power in Venezuela by the Cuban regime. He was protected until 2 days ago by the Cuban regime. His inner security circle was Cuban's military
guards.
Men.
Guards, yes.
Correct.
Judith, people say that Donald Trump has acted illegally.
Donald Trump, listen, where were those people, where are they since 1959 that Fidel Castro won the revolution? Since then has been violating the human rights of Cuban citizens. Where were those people when Chavez destroyed democracy in Venezuela, destroyed the oil industry and every single industry, confiscating everything, yes?
Yes.
Enriching himself, his regime. Yes? Where were those people? Where were those people when Maduro stole the election in August 2024 on the face of the world?
I know, Judith. He did steal the election because he was so far behind his opponent. Judith, what should the British Prime Minister do or say now? Judith? Should the British Prime Minister come out and fully support Donald Trump? Should he say, well, we need to be sure about the law here? What should he say, Judith?
No, he should support it fully. It's about time that we support our allies. Yes?
When Europe
is in trouble, we want America to intervene. We want the help of America.
Okay.
But when America acts, for their own security, because this is not about oil only.
No.
I truly believe that this is American security. Here they go.
Okay. And lastly, what do you hope this means for your home country, Cuba, and Cubans? What would you like to see happen there?
We are begging. We are praying. We've been begging United States to intervene in Cuba, like they have done that now in... Of course, we don't want civilian casualties.
Hmm. With that...
a precise operation like they did in Iran, like they did in Venezuela, and we want them to eliminate the Cuban regime.
Okay. Judith, thank you. I can hear the passion coming over the phone there. Have yourself, and thank you for choosing me as the first presenter on LBC You Speak With. I'm sure my colleagues look forward to speaking with you down the weeks and months. Let's take a quick call on the idea of private schools, and we're going to be sharing you that heartbreaking social media post with Jesse Nelson, the star, singing star. Ben is in Lee on Sea. Ben, your reaction to what the figures now, the first full year of operation. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick, and Happy New Year to you and all the listeners.
Thank
and
you,
thank you for taking my call.
Not at all. Thank you.
Just a couple of points, Nick, regarding the actual facts behind these numbers, because there's always a lot of hysteria from the Daily Mail headlines. The first is there are actually 12 more schools now in the public schools than there were this time last year. So the numbers actually increased despite 100 closing.
Where are you getting that from?
I'm getting that from doing a little bit of research and using Google. The other point to mention is that under the Conservatives, 70 a year were closing on average. Mm-hmm. And I didn't hear the mass hysteria then and the concern, which is interesting, isn't it?
But that was because of the financial impact on parents who have children at private school. So there was no change in the landscape by the Conservatives, whereas now...
But 70 a year were closing. Nobody's saying that the fees are... And the fees, you know this because you reported this last year. The public school fees raised far above the rates of inflation during the Conservative years, and nobody was getting up in arms and asking why that was happening.
Yes, but it's the imposition by this government. And we were told that this will lead to more recruitment of teachers, and yet... In the first full year, our education standards have gone down. If we were able to point to the state sector, Ben, and we were shooting the lights out in global league tables, then honestly, this argument would go away. But this is purely a punitive policy because some within the Labour Party think every child who goes to private school has rich parents, and I promise you that is not the case.
I disagree with you, Nick. I don't think it's a punitive measure at all. It's a luxury item of which VAT gets charged, and VAT gets charged on luxury cars. Are we arguing that VAT shouldn't be imposed on...
Yes, we are, because in these instances, these parents are still paying their taxes to fund state education, and they make a decision to go without... I'm not saying the super rich. I totally take on board there will be the super rich whose children go to Eton, but I'm talking about private schools you've never heard of where children go.
But Nick, I pay my car insurance, but I've never crashed my car. So are you saying I shouldn't have to pay insurance because my car's never crashed?
No, that's not
part of living
insane,
in society is everybody contributes to the greater good of society.
And if I choose, because I'm fortunate to, and as I did actually, if I choose to educate my children, why on earth should I be taxed again? I already pay my tax for the state school children, and my children aren't taking up places. Or weren't taking up places, I should say.
But Nick, that's just the price of living in a fair and civilized society. You made that choice. You didn't have to make that choice. You chose to make that choice. It wasn't imposed on you to send your children to a private school.
I think there are only five or seven public schools, which was Eton, and which anyway doesn't. They're all referred to as private schools, which is fine. But again. It's not had what the opposition, now the government, said it would improve educational standards. Ben, it's not.
Well, Nick, it's been 14 months this policy has been, or less than 14 months this policy is in place. You can't just turn teachers out overnight. They have to want to apply to do the job. Then you have to train to do the job. Then they have to be trained in school. So it's not a 5-minute fix,
okay.
Is it?
You don't lastly have a degree of concern for 25,000 children who've had to change school?
Yes, to some extent, but there are, as I said to you earlier, there are more schools open than they've closed.
Yeah, but they still have to change them, doesn't
it? I'm sure the policy used to be that, you know, if you wanted to get a job, get on your bike and go elsewhere. Well, you know, those schools exist. They're there. You go to other schools.
All right. The old palace of John Whitgift School in Croydon, Ursuline Prep in Ilford, London Acorn in Morden, on and on it goes on, the Cedar School, so on and so on. They all have closed their doors. Ben, thank you. Let's see if others want to pick up on that. Certainly a conversation we are having is about Venezuela and the impact of actions by Donald Trump over the weekend. Matthew's in Tottenham. Now, you've experience of the region, I see. Where did you live then? Good morning.
Hi, Nick. I lived in Colombia for over a year.
How
and I lived
interesting.
In, very interesting, yeah.
What all were you over... doing there? Was that for research or for work or pleasure?
It started off for pleasure, and then I did a bit of business out there. Nothing illegal, my ad.
Well, I'm not so sure about that. I'll be the judge of that. Okay, yeah, what do you remember most acutely about your time in Colombia?
Okay, so my time in Colombia, I met so many good friends. Most of them were from Venezuela, because around that time, which was 2018, 2019, there was a massive exodus of people leaving Venezuela for the situation there.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got lots of friends that have been dispersed all over Europe, all over America. Mm-hmm. I'm in contact with them all the time, especially at the moment with what's going on. And all of them, everyone without fail, is happy that this has happened. So
reasons they give for their happiness?
Wow. The reason for their happiness is they've been persecuted for the last 25 years.
Right.
They've lived in a communist country, and they've been persecuted. If they say anything against the government, they get put in prison. This is the reason why people have had to leave the country. Okay, they've destabilized the whole country, and obviously all the oil that's in the country is not being actually, the people are not benefiting from it. Russia's been in there taking the oil. Iran's been in there taking the oil. China's been in there taking the oil. And these liberals that are trying to make out like it's just about oil, yes, there probably are other reasons involved, but the most important thing for me and for the Venezuelan people is that they are happy that they are free. And this is what the liberals need to understand, yeah? Get off the bandwagon. It's not your fight, okay? These people can stand up for themselves. They don't need you guys getting involved, giving you 2 pence, like you know anything about the situation. Like the lady said earlier, they have done nothing over the last 10 years with regards to what's happened in Venezuela. All of a sudden, they want to put their 2 pence in. They're disgusting people. I really do. I'm right. Starting to hate them a little bit, to be honest.
Well, let's not use words like hatred. You don't last. You have no questioning at all of the tactics.
Horrible world.
Lastly, Matthew, you don't question in any way, shape or form the tactics employed by President Trump on the weekend.
Definitely not. If the people are happy, that's all that matters to me.
Okay, Matthew. Have a good one. Thank you. On the subject of private schools, Graham in Bushy reminds us when Labour imposed VAT, they kept saying that only minimal numbers of pupils would leave and move to state schools. 25,000 pupils over the last year is not minimal. Joydeep says, the VAT on private schools was a bad idea. I know parents who are just going abroad, along with tax reasons, of course. Education in the UK now is not so great. Well, it's not, and we were told it would change the figures. It's Venezuela, Jay, that you and I are going to be talking about. And it is also that social media post from former Little Mix star Jessie Nelson about her children with SMA, spinal muscular atrophy. We're going to give you more on that after this, too. It is 9:45, LBC News Headlines. Dominic Ellis.
The government's under pressure from some of its own MPs to oppose US action to seize Venezuela's president. Mobile phones and SIM cards can be seized from illegal migrants from today without needing to arrest them. And hundreds of schools in northern Scotland are closed where amber warnings for snow are in force. LBC weather staying very cold for most of the UK. Snow showers continuing for northern Scotland and northern England. A high of 7 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays on the M1 northbound to Junction 12 at Flitwick. It's because of an accident. Also very busy on the A10 in both directions between the Hartford turnoff at the A414 and the Ware turnoff. There's been an accident and the road is currently closed. In South Wimbledon, Merton Road is closed both ways after an accident. And just north of Marble Arch, the A5 Edgware Road stays closed both ways because of an ongoing investigation. On the underground, there are so many problems, including the District Line, which is parts suspended between Edgware Road and High Street, Kensington, and also no service from Turnham Green. But then also there are delays for the Bakerloo, the Central, the Circle, the Hammersmith and City, Jubilee and Metropolitan and Victoria lines.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
So what next for Venezuela, and what should Keir Starmer be doing about Donald Trump's latest aberration?
James O'Brien at 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
So, so, so scandalous. You. Yeah, you. When life gets a little too lifey, why not line it up with Muller Lights? So go on, reach into that fridge, rip that lid off and spoon it like nobody's watching. There's the fruit-delicious raspberry and cranberry, zesty Greek-style lemon or the tasty new tiramisu flavour. Ooh, but where to start? Eeny, meeny, miny, yum. Muller Light, get the good going.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
Big motoring world are big on value. But what does that mean for you? Well, we price check our cars every day so we can give you the best price. Guaranteed. In fact, 95% of our cars are priced below market value. Big motoring world, we're big on value. See website for nearest store. Visit bigmotoringworld.co.uk or one of our stores for our price promise and terms and conditions.
The famous five are at home, and Julian could barely contain his excitement.
Why are you so excited? Asked George. Is it your birthday? Is it snowing? Asked Dick. Are we having treacle sponge tonight? Asked Anne.
No, said Julian. It's the Great GWR Getaway Sale.
The Great GWR Getaway Sale is now on. Hurry, book before January 5th at gwr.com or on the app. Great Western Railway. Adventures start here. Terms apply, selected routes only. Travel by April 10th.
The Hilton sale is now on, and thankfully it doesn't sound like this. Instead, our sale sounds a bit more like this.
Welcome back.
With a warm welcome, spacious rooms, central locations, and up to 20% off your stay. You can swap chaos for comfort this winter. Book now at Hilton.com. Hilton, for the stay. Offer subject to availability across participating hotels. Terms and conditions apply.
Okay, who's all in for Cancer Research UK's Race for Life?
We're doing pretty muddy.
It's an obstacle course.
There's one for kids.
Runners.
Walkers.
Book clubbers.
Knit clubbers.
Tenpin bowlers.
Choir singers.
Lake swimmers.
Gardeners.
Whether you climb it.
Slide it.
Or crawl it.
Go all in against cancer.
All in to help fund life-saving research.
Sign up now.
And save 30% off entry to your local 3K, 5K, 10K or Pretty Muddy event. Search Race for Life. Discount ends January 31st, 2026. T's and C's apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Back to Venezuela in a moment, but Jessie Nelson broke down in tears as she revealed her eight-month-old twins will probably never walk because of a rare genetic condition. She's 34. She's a former Little Mix star, of course. Her partner is the musician Zion Foster. Gave birth to her daughters prematurely in May last year. And here's part of the video posted to social media yesterday.
My mum noticed that the girls were not showing as much movement in their legs as they should be. Few signs then started to show a bit later on that they were struggling to feed properly. It was getting gradually less and less and less. We would take them to the GP. We were saying, you know, our babies are not feeding as frequently as they should. They were like, oh, don't worry, it's fine. Just keep trying little and often, little and often. Anyway, long story short, after the most grueling 3-4 months and endless appointments, the girls have now been diagnosed with a severe muscle disease called SMA type 1. For those of you that don't know what SMA type 1 is, it is the most severe muscular disease that a baby can get. It stands for spinal muscular atrophy, which can affect, well, it does affect every muscle in the body, down to legs, arms, breathing, swallowing. And essentially what it does is, over time, it kills the muscles in the body. And if it's not treated in time. Your baby's life expectancy will not make it past the age of two. When they assessed the girls at Great Ormond Street, we were told that they're probably never going to be able to walk. They probably will never regain their neck strength, so they will be disabled. And so the best thing we can do right now is to get them treatment and then just hope for the best.
Well, I told you it was heartbreaking. Let's turn to Giles Lomax, who's CEO of SMA UK. I remind you that's the condition. That's a national charity supporting anyone affected by spinal muscular atrophy. Thanks for coming on. Giles, how common a condition is this? Morning to you.
Morning, Nick. Thank you so much for having us. So, I mean, listening to that again is just heartbreaking. And unfortunately, when we look at the statistics, there are around 48 babies born every year in the UK that have SMA. And of those 48, 60% have the most severe form, that type 1 that Jesse's twins do. So when we look at those figures, that's 28 babies that are going to have the life that Jesse described, and somewhat unnecessarily, because, like she said, if you were to treat before symptoms were to appear, the outcomes in many cases are very different. And at this stage where we are in the UK, we're not in that. We're letting babies get really poorly and we're picking them up in a setting that shouldn't be right. And those babies are going to have to live with their parents with lots of complex health conditions throughout their lives.
So what does life look like for the twins here then, Giles?
I mean, at this moment in time, you know, the way that Jesse described it is very typical for a type 1 child. So these babies will likely never walk, will have problems with swallowing, with problems breathing, will require apparatus, will have spinal issues, lots of different bits of kit will be required. More than likely, they will have up to 22 hours a day nursing care, potentially. They will need wheelchairs, specialist equipment. They'll probably need housing adaptations. They might need to be peg-fed as well. The list is pretty endless, Nick. To be honest, it's quite a difficult and a very difficult position to be in.
Let's come back to what you were saying earlier, Giles. So more we don't know in the case of these two, obviously, but more could be done in cases such as these. What is not happening that you and your colleagues at SMA UK believe should be happening?
Yeah, that's correct. So essentially, we're in a very fortunate position that there are disease modifying therapies available within the UK, and one of those is a gene therapy that Jessie and her twins will more than likely have gone on over the last couple of months. Now, that gene therapy has been administrated and they will probably have those outcomes that we discuss. Now, if babies were tested at birth, so if they were tested as part of the existing heel prick test that every baby gets within the UK on the kind of 5 days, if they're tested, treated with those really amazing disease-modified therapies, we've seen from lots of people from the community that they can grow up to have no symptoms at all and follow completely normal development pathways.
What is the treatment then if the heel prick test shows it? What, presumably drugs are administered, are they? What happens, John?
Correct, yeah. The exact same drugs that her twins will more likely go on. However, rather than the damage has already been done months into it, and as she mentioned, once the muscles are damaged, you cannot repair them. But if you test and treat really, really early in the first couple of weeks of life, that damage hasn't occurred. So babies can then potentially follow normal development pathways. And we do have lots of examples of that because of children that have siblings that have SMA. So, for example, if your older child had SMA and you knew it was in your family, you were really aware of it coming into your second pregnancy, when the baby's born in your second pregnancy, you could be tested and then given those disease-modifying therapies, and in those cases, they are following normal development pathways. Because SMA isn't included in the existing heel prick test at the moment, we're missing it until symptoms appear.
I'm putting myself now in the position of the government. Obviously, you can only spend a pound once. Is there a huge cost implication to increasing this with the testing that you refer to, Giles?
So at the moment, it's £4 a test. So it's £4 a baby. Now, when you boil that down, the cost of the wheelchairs, all of the kit, all of everything you could surround the individual that has SMA, the savings are enormous. And actually, the government commissioned a report through the UK National Screening Committee, through their arm, Sheffield Centre for Health and Related Research, last August, and showed that it is cost effective, that newborn screening, when a screened versus not screening, is found significant benefits of cost savings. And that across the cohort of a year, find up to £62 million. That's how much you would save, because you wouldn't have all of those additional costs on top of it.
And the only reason it would appear this was picked up was because the star's mum recognised it in reality, which is pretty haunting thought in a sense, isn't it?
Absolutely correct. And when you look at those numbers, the 48 that are born a year, the majority of those are picked up by, you know, a family member just not recognising something isn't quite right, or, you know, miss milestones, etc. But what we're trying to do as well as the charity is really trying to raise awareness publicly and in a health visitor setting and in GP setting, just to say, this doesn't quite seem right. Let's just investigate a little bit further, spot some signs, raise awareness and really take some action.
How key, you talk about raising awareness, how key is what Jess has done in that field, would you say?
It's a massive moment for everybody living with SMA, because, you know, if that video just allows for one person to recognise some symptoms, take some action and changes that baby's life, I think that's a huge success. You multiply that over the 48 per year, it could be a huge game changer. But it's a really sad thing to still watch and still hear.
Awful. Finally and briefly, if you can, would you say the government is at least alive to this issue? They are at least listening to you, or are you being greeted with total silence?
We are being met with some resistance, but we're definitely moving in the right direction. There is a planned in-service evaluation, which is essentially a pilot, which will hopefully go live this time next year. However, it won't be across the whole country. It will only be a proportion of the country that will be screened. So if you live in one area that is screened, potentially that's great. If you don't, you might have to wait at least 3 years.
Grateful for your time today. I will leave it there. Thank you. Giles Lomax, CEO of SMA, that's as in Spinal Muscular Atrophy UK, having the last word. If you missed today's show, listen back on Global Player App or the new LBC app, where you can stay up to date with all the latest news and opinions. Put your news categories in the order you want, pause and rewind live radio, and listen to a range of podcasts. Download the all-new official LBC app for free from your app store now. Sorry I didn't get to more of your calls on Venezuela. I'd be staggered if it's not carried on by some of my colleagues, but I am done for today. James O'Brien is the other side of the news on LBC. I'm back with you tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, stay safe.
Thank you very much, Nick. Happy New Year. The time is approaching 10 o'clock, but the song more or less remains the same. Donald Trump acting in a way that makes a mockery both of international law and, of course, of democratic norms. There are a variety of things that spring to mind, some perhaps unsurprising. For example, the pardon for a leader from the same part of the world, Juan Orlando Hernandez, who was serving a 45-year sentence for trafficking cocaine, former Honduran president. So all the desperate attempts by Donald Trump fans to pretend that this is an example of anything other than moral and financial self-interest are doomed from the start. But I wonder whether you can work out why I also find myself thinking this morning about Godfather 2.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the Foreign Secretary Yvette Cooper is expected to set out the government's response later to the US capture of Nicolas Maduro. Venezuela's ousted leader was seized by American forces on drugs charges in Caracas on Saturday. Questions have been raised, though, over whether the operation was allowed under international law. Speaking to LBC's Nick Ferrari, the Home Office Minister Mike Tapp declined to say whether the UK believes it was legal.
It's not a bad thing that this dictator is no longer in charge in Venezuela. What's important now is that we see a safe, peaceful, democratic transition. And we've made it clear, international rules is always at the heart of what we do as a country.
But surely President Trump has breached international law, hasn't he, Minister?
Well, we're still waiting to see that legal basis laid out by the United States for its operation.
Hundreds of schools in northern Scotland are closed this morning, where amber warnings for snow and ice have just come out of effect. There are less severe yellow alerts in place for much of the rest of the UK. The forecaster Jim Dale has told LBC that the cold weather is likely to stick around until the end of the week.
Ice is the major problem this morning for many of us, all lying snow. You know, the Arctic airstream is in situ, will remain in situ for the next 48, 72 hours.
A former pupil at a British school has been confirmed as one of the victims of the fire at a Swiss ski resort. 15-year-old Charlotte Nidham was among the 40 people killed in Crans Montana on New Year's Day. Border officials will be able to seize mobile phones from people crossing the channel in small boats without having to make arrests. Ministers say the new powers will help officials gather data to tackle smuggling gangs. More than 41,000 people made the journey across the English Channel last year. A ban on advertising unhealthy foods on television and online to come into force as part of plans to tackle childhood obesity. Ads for items high in fat, salt or sugar will only be shown on TV after 9 p.m. And England's cricketers allowed Australia to fight back on day two, the final Ashes test in Sydney. Joe Root's century helped Ben Stokes' side to 384 all out before the hosts closed on 166 for two. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 29 at £99.80. The pound buys $1.34 and a euro 15. LBC weather staying very cold but bright for most of the UK through today. Snow showers will continue for northern Scotland and the north of England, a high of 7 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Have you ever wondered what it would be like to be inside a bowl of Heinz soup? Floating on a blanket of thick tomatoey goodness. The aromas tickling your nostrils. A crispy little human crouton drifting off, getting lost in the soup. Bathe in comfort. It has to be Heinz.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It is 3 minutes after ten. A very good morning for you. Can we not do this again? Can I not? The first message I've seen this morning. I mean, thank you, Fiona. It's a lovely sentiment. But can we not begin the new year with the words "Daddy's home" appearing in my text inbox, please? I quite like the sentiment, but I don't know. I'm not sure that I like the delivery. I'm just making a little list, not a Christmas list, obviously, although I hope you had a lovely one, of things that are sort of floating around in my mental orbit this morning as we prepare to address the extraordinary events with regard to the USA and Venezuela. I'll start with four, and there are prizes galore on offer for anybody who can explain why all four of these people are in my thoughts this morning. But I shall explain why. The first is Yuval Noah Harari, whose geopolitical writings, it's essentially commentary on humanity itself, has been one of the great joys of the last 10 years to discover. The second is Mario Puzo, who is, I think, probably up there for most people, whether they know his name or not, as the man responsible for some of the finest entertainments of our time. The third is Juan Orlando Hernandez, who you may not have heard of, or you probably hadn't heard of until relatively recently, unless you follow matters South and Central American very, very closely. He perhaps is at first glance the most significant character in this cast. And the fourth is Fiona Hill. You will remember Fiona Hill, the daughter of a Durham coal miner and a guest on one of my favourite episodes of Full Disclosure, who ended up working at the highest level in Donald Trump's first White House. Why are those four people in my thoughts this morning, do you think? Shall we try and work our way through it? Yuval Noah Harari wrote, and I read this to you at the time, in April of last year, about Donald Trump creating a world of rival fortresses. The surprising thing about Donald Trump's policies, he wrote, is that people are still surprised by them. Headlines express shock and disbelief whenever Trump assaults another pillar of the global liberal order. At the time, the best example was his support for Russia's claims for Ukrainian territory, or his contemplation of the forced annexation of Greenland, or the unleashing of financial chaos with his tariff announcements. And you have to sort of recognise that there is nothing surprising anymore about what he does. And sadly, there is nothing surprising about the desperate contortions undertaken by the people who love his moral corruption, who love his disgusting attitudes and behaviours, to defend his latest conduct. Because I don't know today, let's start where we ended last year, I don't know who has rendered themselves more ridiculous in their attempts to defend Donald Trump. It is either Nigel Farage, who you probably have heard of, or a chap called Richard Littlejohn, who writes columns in the Daily Mail. They have scaled, I mean, frankly, extraordinary heights of absurdity in their inability to criticise Donald Trump, even as the evidence of his awfulness, well, even as all of his critics are proved completely and eternally right about everything. If you are built a certain way, if your psychology is sufficiently flawed, you can never climb down from a position that you've adopted. So you end up having to defend everything, up to and including, presumably, whatever it is in the Epstein files that he remains so desperate to keep secret that he's ended up invading a foreign sovereign country. Almost on the day, actually, that he was required to produce the goods or to lift the final sort of limits on those disclosures. So Yuval Noah Harari has, like many people, but he perhaps expresses himself best, been calling this out for years and been pointing it out and been describing every single facet, every aspect of it in beautiful, almost poetic terms. And on it goes, the annexation of Venezuela, effectively. Mario Puzo, all right, probably the least obvious character on this list. Mario Puzo, as you probably know, is the author of The Godfather. I watched the first two, the only two, really, Godfather films over the holiday period, and was reminded of two things, both of which came into very sharp focus when Donald Trump illegally invaded Venezuela. The first was, and kidnapped the president. the first was, yeah, do you know, I nearly said then, you know, no one's going to mourn much for the passing of Maduro's political career, but you don't do that. That way madness lies. You are not allowed to invade foreign countries and kidnap the president. It doesn't matter how awful he is. It doesn't matter whether or not he tortures kittens or pulls the wings off butterflies. It does not, none of it matters. You just don't do it any more than you pardon people, just to jump ahead slightly, who are serving 45-year sentences for trafficking cocaine while president of foreign countries. It's just not allowed. So you don't caveat your support for international law by saying, well, you know, this time